Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yes, broadcasting to you from the panhandle of Florida. So we're having a slightly chillier time here. It's interesting. You think of Florida as all tropical, and normally it is, but not this time of year, and certainly not in the panhandle. So it has actually snowed here. You know, I don't think that'll happen this time, this year, but you never know. The year is young. My first year here, and I came from California, and where I was in the San Francisco Bay Area, it was actually quite cool because we get these wonderful ocean currents directly off the Pacific. And, of course, with San Francisco Bay, you know, the fog would drift all the way inland. So you'd have, you know, your typical winter day was about 50, 55, and your typical summer day was about 60 to 65. And it's like the most ideal climate in the world if you don't like too much heat and you don't mind overcast. And so that was the best thing about it. That and avocados. I think the fog and the avocados are the two things I miss most about California. But other than that, I'm having a blast here in Florida. So we have a very varied show today. There's a lot of things to talk about. I started with the court mandates. I was looking at a bunch of stuff last night, but we have since, you know, drifted way beyond that in terms of what's going on. In fact, I have an ongoing investigation into the Senate parliamentarian, which apparently seems to be the real force behind our budget and the potential to save the country, but she's not doing a good job. So that's Elizabeth McDonough, and we will learn more about her probably tomorrow. So I should announce we do have a change in the schedule. Claire Lopez has left Action Radio to pursue other avenues, other venues, other things like that. So we have our Thursday later part of the show. She was normally on 8:15 Central for the last 45 minutes. Brilliant person, just great insight into foreign policy. Told us things we never would have known about the Afghani constitution being a Sharia law constitution brought to us by our own State Department. And so we're going to miss her. But she had some valuable, just wonderful insights. But that's Action Radio. People come to us. They stay when they can and move on to different things. And we have many people been through the show already over the course of our 3 years. And so we do have a little extra time here. And I was just thinking how crowded our schedule was getting. It's like, oh, no, do we have any free time to talk about stuff? Well, we got a little more free time now. But knowing Action Radio and knowing the fact that we pick up people all the time with new and interesting and different things to say, it's only a matter of time before we get another. I think now that creates a big void in our foreign policy analysis. And so I'll be looking around for another such person. We have Dr. Peter Pry does, you know, national security, nuclear weapons, defense issues like that on Mondays. But as for foreign policy analysis, that is something we're definitely going to look into. Anyway, Gene's on the line too, of course, or actually direct connected, you know, through our vast internet network, and I'm sure he'll be joining us at some point soon. Gene does something really valuable to the show as I get distracted and, you know, button pushing and listening to guests and taking copious notes that I do, and that is our live chat. And so if you want to go on the live chat's a great place if you want to, if you don't have time to make a comment, or if you think you're going to say something I'm going to disagree with and I'm going to cut you off, which I don't. You know, unless you're just a total jerk. But, you know, as long as you're a decent person, you can disagree with me as strongly as you want, as long as you're civil about it. And that's a lot. But if you don't want to call for whatever reason, that's why we have live chat. And live chat requires a very simple thing. You just have to go to the Blog Talk Radio, our broadcast page, and I think it's either top left corner or somewhere, get yourself a free account, log in, and then, of course, you can say anything to us that you want, as controversial it is. But and a lot of times they get to the comments, not always, but depending on situations. But feel free to comment there, and I will respond as best I can, as soon as I can, given, you know, whatever is happening at the time. Gene, I don't think people really realize how much of our show is improvised. You know, I mean, I have a rough idea. We have David Jones at 7 o'clock, but other than that, we're pretty much open.
Right.
What do you think? Good morning.
Yeah. Good morning. That's so true. Yeah.
So those of you that think we sit around, Gene and I, you know, of course we're like about 1,000 miles apart right now. But if you think that we sit down and plan every minute, like a lot of those shows where they format and constrict and edit ahead of time and do all these, you know, certain, you know, just splice up their interviews and their little talking points and their various cuts, we wouldn't have time for that. we'd just rather talk to you. And so if you want to join us today, Wednesday is a good day for free flowing discussion. I'll say the biggest fault I have in radio is I know I talk way too fast. I do. And listeners, feel free to call me on it. They say, Greg, slow down. I'll try. It's ADHD. It's the ADHD is cranking up my adrenaline, and it's a bad combination. Gene, do you know anything about that health-wise? Is there any documentation that ADHD plus adrenaline makes you talk faster? I would just be curious.
No.
Have you heard that?
This
no?
is that thing.
Can you find
people tell
for
me that.
I
don't know. I don't know if there's any research or anything out there on that, put it that way. But everybody tells me I need to talk slower. Just slow down. It's unfortunately, I think some of us talk too fast and some talk too slow. And then there's some that talk where you can keep up with them. But, you know, it's like, yeah, I really believe, though, sometimes it is because of your mind, because your mind is racing and it's like, so you're trying to talk fast to get it all out, but it doesn't always work.
No, I just think my mind's in overdrive constantly. And this is why I get so, you know, after a show, I collapse. I mean, I literally do. It's really quite interesting. It's like after you've run a big race and you're just like, oh, you know, but this is like an emotional. It's an amazing amount of energy that goes into this, which is why it makes it worth doing. But if you ever find any connection between ADHD and adrenaline, I'd be really
curious.
I will
let you know.
See what you come up with. Yeah, yeah. Let me see if I got a couple of other housekeeping things. We are 3 hours now, in case anybody has not gotten that. So if your podcast longer, that's why. And so we do broadcast starting at 7 in the morning Eastern time. We set it an hour early, not because we love getting up earlier, but I think it really helps our East Coast folks to know that we're at 7 in the morning, so you can catch us, you know, on your way to work. Just connect your cell phone to your vehicle audio, and there we are. So there's your drive time. Folks on the West Coast, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning, if you're even awake yet, I'm guessing what they do is listen to maybe the last hour live and then get the podcast. Podcasts are only 5 minutes after the show. So five after nine our time, so it'd be five after seven Pacific time. You know, as your folks are on your way to work, just plug your cell phone into your car audio and catch the podcast. You know, so the only difference is you can't call in. But other than that, it's still the same show. So that's cool. I want to announce, too, that I should get the gong for this. I say using the gong more. A, because it's fun. B, because it's loud. And C, because I've got it right here. I just have to find it. I got to find a faster way to find my buttons. All right, so now. And that is that we are now an affiliate of Strikeforce. And so we're one of the Strikeforce warriors. Strikeforce Energy Drinks has now, they're working with us. And you get a 20% discount for any Strikeforce product if you put code WYL, that's Write Your Laws, WYL, into their discount code, and you'll get a 20% discount, and that helps out Action Radio as well. And so you can help Action Radio, you can get yourself a discount, you can get yourself some high energy drink, and do all those things at the same time. So Strikeforce, I'm going to have a nice little production for them probably in the next little while. I'll get that out there, but that's right there, and you'll see that on our broadcast page right there. We have an announcement on that. So if you don't have to write all this stuff down, it's right there on the announcement page. And I think that's about all I had for, yeah, those things I should be announcing every day. But anyway, Gene, I'm going to let you start. I've got a few news stories before we get into the court cases, and we've got plenty of time today. So anybody, in fact, I'm watching my clock on the wall, which is the bat dying. So it's getting slower and slower. It's like it says about 3 minutes to six right now. So I got to start looking at my computer clock. So anybody that has a real clock somewhere in your premises, it's kind of fun. But, you know, when the battery winds down, you can definitely see it's like, oh, that's not accurate anymore. Gene, any stories of that have been bugging you in the last 24 hours? And then we can talk about a few things and then court cases and David Jones. And then who knows? Anybody else might want to join us, too. Go ahead.
One that I'm curious about, just your thoughts with Chris Cuomo and CNN and on leave now or whatever. And why now?
Why not now?
This should have happened a long time ago. And so why now? Is it because of the trial? Or what? I mean, what is going on?
Well, it's his brother or what? Or Ghislaine Maxwell.
Yes, yes.
Okay, yeah.
Both trials, actually, but yeah.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I've been calling them CNN, the Creative News Network, for a couple of years now, and well into the beginnings of our show here at Action Radio. And now I guess most people are calling them the Communist News Network. Pretty much amounts to the same thing. I don't have much use for CNN. You know, they are the epitome of fake news. They are agenda-driven. They are the worst example of what used to be journalism in the world today. They are the most fake, lying, narrative-pushing, distorting, just outright, you know, it's almost like everything they say, because I see clips of them on Fox News and some of the other places. So I don't really care what happens at the Creative News Network. If anything, you know, I wouldn't abolish them or restrict them. You know, I think it's a good example of how bad journalism has, or how far journalism has fallen, how bad it can be. And the idea that you have, you know, I mean, Chris Cuomo's there because he's the brother of Andrew Cuomo. Andrew Cuomo's there is because he's the son of Mario Cuomo. You know, it's a very nepotistic family operation. And so it's fascinating. CNN will take, you know, former Trump, you know, employees who are disgruntled for some reason. I'm surprised Liz Cheney isn't on CNN. She will be.
She will be.
The Republican Party. She will be. It's only a matter of time, right? And who's that other? There's another guy that's on the January 6th political
Adam committee. Is it Adam Kissinger?
It's not Kissinger, but it's close. You're on the right track. Henry Kissinger, of course. You're talking about Henry Kissinger, master of the world, whose fake German accent is at least 80 years old, yes. And he maintains it. I actually met Henry Kissinger.
It's
a funny story. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a... I was actually with some friends of mine, a friend of mine in band. He was a freshman in college, and I was still, I think, either a junior or senior that year. So we were still buds. And a few of us, he was studying film production, something I've always been interested in. And so he was pretending to be a TV news guy, and we were in Boston. And it just so happens that Henry Kissinger's wife was being treated for something in one of the Boston hospitals. And so we actually saw his limo. We saw these Secret Service guys gathering around the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. And, of course, we made the mistake of saying we could get a shot of him from over there, meaning a camera shot, right? And the Secret Service, and I see the guy behind, you know, he's like, he's cocked his head over, he's got his little earpiece. I said, look, and I walked over and Charlie walked over too. I said, look, we know you're Secret Service. We know, obviously you got the earpiece. We know who you are. We misspoke. What we're talking about, we're you know, a junior college, you know, film student group. And he's like, uh-huh. It's like watching us. I said, seriously, that you know, I said, but if you want to check it, you know, and Charlie came over in his three pieces. Yeah, I'm, you know, and then we had the cameras and stuff. We showed him. He's like, oh, okay. Yeah, all right. So we didn't use the word shot for the rest of the day, which was a smart thing to do. Anyway, so what we didn't know was that Henry Kissinger showed up just like a few minutes later. Of course, and Charlie's like, get the cameras going. So Charlie and not only pretends to be a news guy on camera, he actually pretends to be a news guy to Henry Kissinger. All right. So Kissinger steps out. This is one of those stories you never hear about, but he steps out. We got it on film. So Charlie, I won't give his last name, but he's got it. I'm sure he's kept this film because it's great. So he comes out and he's got this microphone in his hand. I don't even know if it's connected to anything. He's got a fake microphone. And now we're with you know, Secretary of State Henry Kissinger here, who's arrived in Boston for the treatment of his wife. Mr. Kissinger, how are you doing today, sir? You know, oh, fine. Oh, good to see you. Yes, thank you very much. Yes, love being in Boston. Anyway, so he did, and I don't know if the mic, I don't know if the mic was connected or they were using the mic on the camera. Whatever it was, we got it. And then one of the other students said, can we shake your hand? I mean, it's something totally unjournalistic, right? And so we all shook his hand, and he said, oh, nice to meet you. He's a short little guy, you know. Anyway, so then we left him alone, and off he went into the Ritz-Carlton. And this is back, I guess, the 70s, late 70s, you know, while I was still in high school. Yeah. So some of the antics I've been up to, meeting various people along the way, but that's how I met Henry Kissinger.
Oh, that's neat. Yeah.
Yeah. When you're a news person, you can do anything. It's quite fascinating. Anyway, I don't even know how we got onto that.
Well, I don't listen to CNN either, but it's interesting because, and I don't know, I haven't flown in a while, but the airports always had CNN on. And I just know in patients' room, I mean, more of them now, I think, have Fox on, more than they used to have Fox on. But also, there's still so many that have, like, The View on that just is like, are you kidding me? But anyway.
Oh, no, that's, imagine your first impression flying to the United States to CNN. Yeah.
Yeah. But still, a lot of people, I mean, not a lot, because their ratings have really tanked. But I think there still are people that watch it and just believe the narrative, which is sad, but it's just,
it just shows you
how two-faced they are, you know, that it's what's good for me is not good for you and vice versa. It's like, don't even do as I say or do, just let me do what I want to, and then we'll tell you what you can do.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's pretty much it. Yeah. Yeah. Shelby is whenever she talks about, you know, well, most people feel this way. Well, I think most people she talks to feel that way. And we've talked about that, but those who use CNN or MSNBC or any of those liberal talking point news stations that are not news stations, they are agenda stations. And we should start calling them that. They have a definite narrative to push. They're cooperating with big government pharma, big pharma and big tech to bring about, you know, a Marxist, dictatorship in this country. I mean, that's their goal. And one of the ways they're trying to get compliance is by giving everybody the jab. But I think one of the flaws in their logic, I don't think they realize this, is that the people who are least likely to take the jab are the most independent people in the country. So they're injuring and killing the compliant people who are doing what the government wants, and the rebels, you know, who refuse to cooperate with this nonsense, this madness. We're the ones who are doing fine. We're the ones who are still healthy. We're the ones who aren't spreading the virus, the variant, the virus. You put virus and variant together, you get variant or whatever I just said. But yeah, which brings us to Omicron. I have a point on my Facebook page, which everybody I hope will note. It's one of my GOP talking points that the geldings refuse to pay me huge sums of money for. But if you would just say the mild Omicron variant every time you say it, it would put the idea in people's heads that this is a mild variant, which of course is what it is. That's what the South African doctors are reporting. But if you don't say it every time, you know, because they're saying the dangerous, you know, the lethal, the deadly, and of course COVID was never that deadly to begin with. It was always the 1% of the population, only the most, you know, the sickest people, the oldest people in the country, the ones who are dying from it, unless you get to the hospital and they give you remdesivir. That's a different story. But
yeah, I was going
to
say, it wouldn't have even been as dangerous if they would have treated it with, ivermectin and all the other things and zinc and whatever, at least give it a try. And I forget where it was, but the person that, I don't know if it was male or female even that was in the hospital, like a court order to give that person ivermectin. The person got ivermectin. 5 days later, walked out. Right there,
there's a doctor
that should
in
tell
Nebraska.
You something. And no, it doesn't happen to everybody. But for something that cheap, and for something that doesn't do you the harm that remdesivir does with all the kidney stuff, why wouldn't they allow it? And we know why they won't allow it. But it's sad.
Yeah, they want to sell vaccines. Yeah, yeah. This was a long thought out campaign. COVID is a marketing tool. I mean, pure and simple. There's big government pharma. The government makes money off the royalties and the license fees. You know, Dr. Fascist makes a fortune off this. Big pharma makes a fortune because they don't pay for the research and development. They don't pay for the product to be produced. We, the taxpayers, do. So this free vaccine has cost taxpayers trillions of dollars. And everybody's cashing in on it. There's so much money involved in this. You know, the hospitals are getting a 20% bonus for using remdesivir, which in trials killed 50% of the participants with kidney failure. You know, and so why don't they use it? Well, and the whole thing about, you know, it's not a question of trying ivermectin to see if it works. We know it works. There are over 300 studies of both ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. It's proven to work over and over and over again. But that's not the point, that it doesn't sell vaccines. That's why they banned it. So you've got people that are so cynical, so greedy, so avaricious, so, insanely obsessed with their own power and money that they don't care how many people they kill so long as they get the dollars. You know, that's pretty sick. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It is. Mm-hmm. It is. But I got a question with what you were saying. So they get money for using remdesivir. All right. Mm-hmm. Can people sue when they have a loved one that dies that was treated with remdesivir when the hospitals are getting paybacks for using it? So isn't that illegal? I mean, I'm from a doctor's standpoint, if they get money, kickbacks from drug companies for prescribing a medication, then a hospital should get fined because that's basically what they're doing. They're telling doctors that you need to do this. Because why? I mean, they may not be telling doctors why, but if they're getting money from the government for using it, then that's the same thing as what they won't allow doctors to do. So I think people should be able to sue because the hospitals aren't the people that are saying what needs to be used. Are they medical doctors?
Well, see, I think they should be in jail. Most hospital administrators are not doctors. They're bean counters. And I think that the people that are bean counting should be in jail for withholding life-saving treatment. You know, because we know it works. The studies show that both ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine work in conjunction with zinc, vitamin D3, and vitamin C. This is known. There are just literally hundreds of studies proving
over 600.
You know, and as I posted on Facebook a little while ago, you know, you can ask the people that received early treatments of hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, because they're still here. You can't talk to most of the people that received remdesivir and were put on a ventilator, because 97% of them are dead. I mean, I hate to be that cold and callous and brutal. It's not callous, but cold and brutal. But that's the brutal truth. The brutal truth is, if you withhold life-saving treatments, early treatments, you end up at the hospital, get remdesivir, your kidneys fail, your lungs fill with fluid, they try and blast that fluid out with a ventilator, and you're going to die. 97% chance. That's just statistical fact. Okay. So now, why can't the hospitals be sued? I have no idea. As far as I'm concerned, it's gross medical malpractice. It's withholding life-saving treatments. It's going against the it's blocking doctors from being able to prescribe, you know, blocking doctors from treating their patients, all because of money. I mean, it doesn't get much more cynical than that. Now, remdesivir is not a vaccine.
We're not even talking. I mean, not even the people that have died because of the wrong treatments they've been given and the way they die. I mean, basically suffocating. How awful is that?
No, you're drowning. You're drowning in your own fluid.
But then how about the kids that are committing suicide, and not even kids, adults that are committing suicide because they're cooped up. They can't go out and they're very depressed.
Oh, well, the lockdowns killed more people than the disease. We know that. In fact, Redfield, when he left the CDC, I think he said something like that. The lockdowns were far more dangerous. But you see, lockdowns were designed to perpetuate the disease. See, lockdowns were designed to induce stress. And what does stress do to your immune system? It lowers it, right?
Yeah.
So everything the government did was designed to save COVID. Not COVID, okay? So I'm speaking loudly, so if I break up, let me know. But I'm really passionate about this stuff. That everything the government did was wrong. In fact, the big health, big government pharma under Dr. Fascist, the genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic vaccine drug pusher, I want you all to practice that line. Genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic vaccine drug pusher. And my name is Greg Penglis. If you want to sue me, Dr. Fascist, go ahead. You know, it's not libel if it's true, and I can prove it. I'm talking to a lot of people. Anyway, point being that that everything they did was to save COVID. COVID would have died out July 4th, Independence Day of 2020. I mean, I've got the stats. I've got the CDC chart. And I can post it again, you know, where COVID started in January, peaked at April 15th, tax day, which is kind of ironic, and it was pretty much on the way to nothing with like 300 deaths in the country July 4th. Of 2020. And then, of course, they changed the numbers, went from deaths to cases, inflated everything, brought in the lockdowns, did everything possible to stress out the whole country so that COVID would have a good breeding ground. And then it did. And then COVID came back, I think. I'm not sure how much. I mean, it's hard to know if any of those figures are actually accurate. But then as it was dying out in the end, in the fall of 2020, you know, by December, they had their vaccines, which, of course, brought back COVID again. That's what these messenger RNA shots do. They give you COVID to hopefully teach your body, you know, to get rid of COVID. But since you already have a natural immune system, your body's already learned how to get rid of COVID. So the idea that you have to take a vaccine to do what your body does better naturally is insane. It's irrational, unless you want to sell vaccines. And that's what this is all about. This is about money. This is a marketing campaign. It's always has been. Go ahead.
Also, if you look at it, and there's more cases this year than last year, and how many people, and not even more cases, more people dying, then and they've got the vaccine, that should not be happening if the vaccine is working. Because if the vaccine was working and you get COVID, then your case, like they keep telling us, will not be as severe.
Wait a minute. You shouldn't get COVID if the vaccine is working.
You shouldn't, right.
Yeah. So what this proves is that the vaccine spreads COVID faster and causes more death, which proves you're better off without the vaccine. So if you want any evidence at all, the fact that more people died when the vaccines were in widespread use than before the vaccines were in widespread use, you know, what's the common factor? The vaccine. Even though it isn't a vaccine, it's a messenger RNA genetically modified organism. That's why it's a mRNA GMO. That's why I call it that. Okay. So correct labeling is always important here. It's an RNA GMO shot. It's probably the easiest way to say it. What do you mean RNA GMO? Well, it changes your RNA, and it's a GMO. It's a GMO just like corn and soy and all those other things that have been genetically enhanced. You know, you could say that corn you know, has gain of function research too, not to make it a virus, but to make it more, you know, corn-ish, according to the marketing. It's like, you know, tomatoes were genetically bred to survive a 14-mile-an-hour conveyor belt. They weren't bred to taste better. That's why tomatoes taste like crap now compared to tomatoes 50 years ago. But they can ride a conveyor belt, you know, with less bruising. You know, that's what they're bred for. So the world is a strange place. You know, it's hard to get real food. Anyway,
yeah.
I got a couple articles here. Yeah, go ahead.
Uh-huh. Kids in schools and stuff are, you know, a lot of districts are mandating the masks again.
Of course they are. Why? To bring back COVID, because COVID's going away. All right. But you know, isn't the I think my theory is that the mild Omicron variant, which variant discovered in South Africa by Dr. Cortez, C-O-E-T-Z-E-E-E, was because that the vaccines weren't working. Obviously, everybody's starting to realize that, and because the mandates are being overturned by the courts. So every time something good happens with COVID, they bring it back. And how do you bring it back? Masks and lockdowns, stress. You know, which raises alcoholism, drug addiction, spousal abuse, sexual assault, depression, anxiety, and suicide. Well, all those things increase COVID because they weaken people. And that's what these things are. They're not designed to stop COVID. They're designed to enhance COVID. You know, because obviously the countries with the least lockdowns and the states with the least lockdowns did better than states with the most lockdowns. Well, just empirical evidence will tell you, if you have more people dying in California than Florida per capita, and California is more restrictive than Florida, obviously the problem is the restrictions. It doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure this out.
Right.
But the,
exactly.
But the creative
but then
now add in the Creative News Network lying to people, okay?
Yeah.
So the only way this works is for the Creative News Network and MS Communist BC, you know, they have to lie to people. And Shelby, when she talks about, this is what people think, this is what they feel, this is what they're being told, so this is what they believe. Well, I can't help their intellectual incompetence. That is, you know, I'm trying to change it, and we're doing the best we can here, and so are all kinds of other networks like One American News and, to a lesser extent, Newsmax and other places. The information is out there. Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Judy Mikovits, Dr. Brian Artis, whose show I hope to be on soon, Dr. Ben Marble. You know, these other folks are fascinating. Dr. Deborah Viglione here in Pensacola, who's put on two fabulous rallies. I mean, the information is there. It's not that hard to find. It's on the net. You can't always share it. I got a couple articles here I can't share, which is the ones I usually broadcast. But yeah, information is there. Just got to look around a little bit for it. So follow-up point, and then I've got an article here for you.
And I was just going to say, with mm-hmm. getting back to the kids again, it's a sad day when your kid has to go to the dentist and they start screaming and crying hysterically because they're afraid if they take their mask off, they're going to die of COVID. And I heard that recently somewhere, I forget what I was watching, and they were saying that happened with in a dentist office. And yes, how very sad is that?
Well, that's the parents' fault. And first of all, the parents were putting a mask on their kids because the risk to kids from COVID is statistically zero. Now, does that mean some kids aren't affected? Some, but so few. The percentage is like, 0.00001% of the kids are seriously affected by COVID. And the younger, the less affected they are. So the idea that you have to put a useless mask with, Chinese worm parasites, microscopic worms in these things, plus all the other chemical problems they have, and the masks are causing far more damage than than COVID itself as far as kids go. Because kids, more kids die from the flu than COVID.
Yeah,
that's really sad.
I mean, mm-hmm. it's sad if any child dies, but the reality is...
Of course it is.
Yes, kids do die of flu. Adults die of flu. And why, you know, what are we going to now start after this is over? Well, this is never going to be over to the extent that we hope it to be over, because they always have to have something.
Well, but they won't let it be over.
There's
too much money in it.
Now they're not even getting tested for flu in the hospital. Is that insane or what?
Well, the PCR test, you know, we had to reschedule our lab person who was going to be here today. But, these PCR tests are not testing for COVID. They're programmed for, you know, flu, COVID. They can't tell the difference between flu, cold, or COVID. So they're just calling it COVID just because there's money in it. It's the old Watergate thing, you know, follow the money. This all comes down to money. You've got boosts for remdesivir. You've got boosts for more hospitalization. You've got higher payments. The CMS, the Center for Medicaid, Medicare Spending System, is one of the most corrupt. We're going to look into them too. I mean, a lot of people are. I mean, there are court cases, all kinds of things. But the folks that spend the money, you know, are saying you can't, they won't reimburse for hydroxychloroquine, even though it works. They'd rather reimburse for remdesivir, which kills people. You know, so it's just, that's the way it goes. I'm surprised we don't have a live comment. You know, this is about time for Bumper Jack to say that we're all a bunch of liars and all kinds of other things. So let me just check that first. I didn't mean to close that window. I just meant to move it. Well, maybe you can check live chat. I'll pop open my last window. Get my article back. Ah, here we go. Anyway, so this is from The Quint. I'm not sure what The Quint is, but it's November 29th, so yesterday. Actually, 2 days ago. Let's get the ad off here for some, I don't know what that's for. Anyway, so most suspected cases mild. South African doctor who detected Omicron. This is what I say. You always have to say, if you want to change the language, if you want to change the effect of anything, you have to change the words you use. And if you always say the mild Omicron variant, slow down, Greg, the mild Omicron variant, get that in people's heads. Always associate the word Omicron with mild. That'll change everything. You know, this is how you fight a fraudulent government. Anyway, the doctor Coetzee, C-O-E-T-Z-E-E, that's not Spanish. She's actually South African. I can't do a South African accent. That other good accent, Coetzee. No, that's not even good. I'll work on my accent. Anyway, Coetzee said Omicron had been hyped as an, quote, as an extremely dangerous virus variant, despite its virulency, V-I-R-U-L-E-N-C-Y, being unknown. Yeah, so they didn't know how dangerous it was, so they said it was dangerous. They didn't know how mild it was, so they said it was lethal. You know, I mean, the without lies, there wouldn't be COVID. I mean, that's just that simple, too. Article says, while there is global concern over the new COVID-19 variant, Omicron, Angelique Coetzee, C-O-E-T-Z-E-E, a South African doctor who has raised the alarm over the same, said on Sunday, the 20th of November, that dozens of her patients suspected of having the new variant had only shown mild symptoms and had recovered fully without hospitalization. Get that, folks? Only shown mild symptoms, recovered fully without hospitalization. Okay. It's a good thing they recovered without hospitalization. Hospitals are dangerous now. Anyway, Coetzee, chair of the South African Medical Association. This isn't just some random doctor out there. This is the chair of the South African Medical Association. Told news agency AFP, not sure who they are, that she had seen around 30 patients over the past 10 days who tested positive for COVID-19 but had unfamiliar symptoms. Okay, she was quoted as saying what brought them to the surgery was this extreme tiredness, which she believes to be unusual for younger patients. Oh, no. People get tired from all kinds of different things, all these various syndromes, you know. The yuppie, it was like a yuppie disease at one point. It was turned out to be too much computing, too much sitting in the wrong kind of chair. That's when those ergonomic chairs came out, that you sort of kneel in. It's kind of funny. Anyway, let me hit the full article button and see what I can get for you here. Other symptoms include mild muscle aches, a scratchy throat, and a dry cough. Well, hell, most people get that when the weather gets cold. It's probably, you know, of the 300 million people in this country, there's probably 100 million of them right now with a scratchy throat, you know, muscle aches, and a potentially dry cough simply because winter's coming on. Hello? Anyways, there's only a few have a slight fever. Unlike other variants which gave severe symptoms, these were mild. Once again, mild. Get that word into your brain, everybody. Mild. The more you say mild, the faster this variant will go away. In fact, that'd be interesting. Gene, what do you think? It'd be interesting to see the psychological component about this. If everybody says the mild COVID variant, well, you know, it's like, well, you want to put restrictions for the mild COVID variant? I mean, it shouldn't change everything. Well, why do you want a lockdown for the mild COVID variant? You know, why do you want a lockdown for mild Omicron? It's mild. You know, why would you do that? So if we get people saying mild every time we say the mild Omicron variant, that could change everything. It really could. Gene?
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. And why give it more negativity and more, I mean, I say more energy than what it mm-hmm. needs to have. I think because when you start talking that it's how devastating it is and how bad it is and yada, yada, right away, that's giving your power and your energy away. So that's kind of not very bright when it comes to the fact that, like you said, if it's treated right, mm-hmm. and even most people, they do not get it to the point of death. Unfortunately, I just heard last week that there's two different phases of it, which makes sense because I think the second phase is when inflammation takes over, and that's the second week or so. And that's, I think, when people more so, and I wish I knew this, but I think that's when they may have, there may be more strokes and things like that, blood clotting. But that being
no,
said,
you're talking about,
it's
no,
like
you're
if
talking
we
about
treat
vaccine.
It, if you get the ivermectin,
yeah.
if you
yeah.
do that, it's like that's needed. They said that has more best results when it's given early. And so that may cut off the inflammation. But the thing is, we need to take control over our own decisions. And when you go to the doctor or something like that, say, mm-hmm. I want this. And if they say, no, I want this. And the problem is, if you end up in a hospital, there may be no one in that hospital that will give that to you. And so mm-hmm. that's the reason why it's so important to have these things. So in case you do get sick, and there are ways to get it, I mean, legal ways from the physicians that believe it.
Well, you just get a prescription ahead of time. Yeah,
yes,
you get prescribed for something else.
Yes. You just can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, call them up and say, hey, I need this, or I want to talk to someone about it. They've got lives. They're very busy. They got other people they're helping. So mm-hmm. be proactive. You know, do it ahead of time.
Well, there's also groups that help you. MyFreeDoctor.com, America's Frontline Doctors. There's telemedicine doctors all over the country. Vladimir Zelenko,
right.
MD.com.
But
there's
they
doctors
can't
that'll
get back to you at that particular moment. It's like,
well,
so you have to be proactive. You can't wait till it happens and then say, oh, I need to talk to someone now. It's not as though they can drop everything on the drop of a hat,
no,
because there's
folks,
many
yeah.
people that they're dealing with going through the same thing.
Yeah. I don't know how busy the telemed people are, but I know that there's enough of them. There's hundreds of telemed doctors across
well,
the country.
I just know when I had it, it took mm-hmm. the American doctors 4 days to get back to me.
Oh, frontline doctors? Yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
and that probably
doctors.
Is because they're so busy.
And I'm
yeah.
not putting a slam on them. I'm just saying these people, they are busy.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's because the other doctors refuse to treat their patients. They'd rather see them
exactly.
go to the hospital, get remdesivir. You know, and here's what the biggest problem is, and we've talked about this before, there is no consequence for having your patients die. You know, where is the medical malpractice? Where are the lawsuits? Where are the courts? You know, and of course, the courts are going to, the first thing the big health is going to say, big government health and big pharma is going to say is, well, these drugs are FDA approved. What's the problem here? You know, we did what we was approved to do. You know, so the hospitals are just following our guidelines, you know. And
but
then
they
the government's
follow
immune prosecution.
The science.
Yeah.
Which Fauci
yeah.
preached for months, follow the science. He's
yeah, I got
not
an article
following
on that too.
The science.
No. Oh, he is the science. Didn't you hear? He is the science. Dr. Fascist is the science. He said so himself, so it must be true. Let me finish this a little bit, and I'll get you my Dr. Fascist article. It says most of Cote's patients were men under 40 years of age, while only half were vaccinated. Okay, well, that's interesting. On the 18th of November, when Cote's had received 7 of her 30 patients, she alerted health officials of a clinical picture that doesn't fit Delta. Yeah. Oh, by the way, the messenger RNA GMO shots that they're passing off as vaccines, they're not adjusted for the variants, okay? You know, they were made during Operation Warp Speed under President Trump before the thief in chief Biden took over and usurped the White House. Then you're getting the same old alpha vaccine. Okay, it's for the alpha strain, which died out at the end of 2020. And so you're getting an obsolete vaccine, which doesn't work anyway, which isn't even a vaccine for a disease that doesn't exist, you know, and now you have an hour of variants created by the people that got the vaccine for the variant that doesn't exist. So this is why this doesn't work. And you wonder why these messenger RNA GMO shots don't work is because they're designed for something that died out a year ago. Okay. So the whole point of a variant is the virus's response to a vaccine that isn't a vaccine, to the original strain, the alpha strain that died out a year ago. The variants come from those who received the messenger GMO alleged vaccine, and they got around it. And then it spread because people who get the, you know, fake vaccine shed spike protein. What's in the spike protein? COVID. You know, and what kind of COVID? A variant. This is how it works. So it's not that the, quote, unvaccinated are dangerous. The reason COVID is still spreading is because people are getting the vaccine. Duh. Because more people died this year than died last year. More people have died and been injured and been killed by the vaccine than were killed by COVID. COVID deaths are like, what, 30,000? If you take those who actually died from COVID, nothing else but died from COVID, it's about 30,000. you know, which is either 5 or 6% of the total, because we know that 96 to 97% of the people who died with COVID, not from it. Okay, so you extrapolate out the 700 plus thousand, you get about, 5% of that is around 30,000 people. All right, we're in about half a flu season, actually less than half a flu season. How many people have died from the COVID vaccine? A whole lot. How many injured? Lots. But the point is that the variants come from people who had the vaccine, which isn't a vaccine, which I keep saying. All right. Let me finish this up quickly, the good genes comment, and then take a quick break, and we'll play some other stuff for you. The variant has been picked up by other South African scientists by then, Cortes added, and was announced Thursday the 25th. So this has only happened in the last, like, week, right? The COVID-19 Omicron, the mild COVID-19 Omicron variant, that's my word, mild, which sparked global concern of being a potentially more contagious variant, but less deadly, folks. More contagious, but less deadly. Keep that in mind, right? And it wasn't that deadly to begin with. Led to several European nations setting up restrictions overnight and setting travel bans on Southern Africa, which the South African government believes to be rushed and unjust. Okay, now, what distinguishes Africa from the rest of the world? Question for Gene. What distinguishes Africa from the rest of the world? Quick question, trivia for you.
Is this according to the coronavirus or just overall?
Yeah, coronavirus. What's different about Africa?
They're not mandating the jab, right?
Nope. But the real thing is they have the lowest rates in the world of COVID. Why? Because most of the countries taking ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine against malaria. And, of course, if you're preventing malaria, you're also preventing COVID. That's why you don't see COVID in Africa. And then, of course, the Bill Gates and the other folks will say, well, they're just not reporting their true numbers. Well, neither are you, pal. You know, so it's very simple. Now, why South Africa? I believe South Africa probably has a much higher, quote, vaccinated rate. And I believe South Africa does not have a malaria problem. So they're not taking ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine like countries like Mozambique, Kenya, Uganda, you know, Mali, all these other countries that have very low COVID rates because they have high malaria rates. So they're actually killing two viruses with one drug, so to speak. If I may paraphrase. But yeah, that's what I think is going on. The other thing I think is going on is they're trying to punish Africa. So if this variant comes from Africa, now Pfizer can go in and say, you have a dangerous variant, which we all know as the mild Omicron variant, right? But Pfizer goes in and says, well, government, you know, and I'm sure they're working with the U.S. government. I'm sure foreign aid is tied in here somehow. The countries that don't take the Pfizer, you know, jab are going to lose foreign aid. They're going to lose something. There's going to be some kind of arm twisting, some kind of oppression of these African countries to make sure they take a vaccine that they don't need because they're already on a preventive. That's what I think is really going on here. This is part of the marketing. And they want to market to Africa because Africa not only has one of the lowest rates of the false jab, but also the lowest rates of COVID. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, totally.
Okay. All right, Cortese emphasizes back to the article, we are not saying that there will not be severe disease coming forward, but for now, even the patients that we have seen who are not vaccinated have mild symptoms. Oh, wait a minute. Did you hear that? Even the patients who are not vaccinated have mild symptoms, proving once again that natural immunity works just as well as, or I think far better than, your vaccine immunity, which is temporary at best. It like degrades so fast, you know, that you need a second shot and then a booster. Well, why would you need a second shot and a booster if the vaccine maintained its strength? Obviously, it doesn't because you need all these extra shots. Oh, we're just trying to get more protection. Well, why do you need more protection? You've already got natural immunity. You got the best protection in the world until you're at that point in life where you don't. That's how it works. After South Africa shared its discovery, the variant has already been detected in Belgium, Botswana, Hong Kong, Israel, Australia, Italy, the UK, and Belgium. Now, Gene, I don't know much about the transmissibility of a virus. But if it was just detected in South Africa, one doctor just found 30 patients, all of which had mild symptoms, you know, how could this thing so fast get to Belgium, Botswana, Hong Kong, Israel, Italy, Australia, and the UK and Belgium if it wasn't already there?
Good question. Good question.
You know, I mean, yeah. We're not geniuses here. We're not brain scientists, you know, or rocket scientists or brain surgeons. We're just looking at this going, well, wait a minute. Yeah, this is very simple logic reason stuff. If this was just
follow the Fauci.
Follow the Fauci. Yeah, exactly. They've been Fauci'd. Can we make that a verb?
Yeah, exactly.
Excuse me. In fact, we should – oh, Gene, you're a genius. Let's say that. Anybody that's been vaccinated, we now say they've been Fauci'd. What do you think? Have you been Fauci'd? Yeah. Hang on, write that down. We got to use that. Have you been Fauci'd?
Yeah.
See, you're a genius. You didn't even know it. Fauci'd is now a verb. F-A-U-C-H-I-E-D. Fauci'd. Don't get Fauci'd. So that's really,
exactly.
Almost sounds rude, doesn't it? It almost like sounds you're dropping F-bombs. Have you been Fauci'd? What? You kidding? No. Okay, fine. Yeah. Don't get Fauci'd. We can make a bumper sticker on that. We thought of it first. Gene thought of it first. Copyright. Gene Vernig, Action Radio, producer. Fauci'd. Her word. All right. Anyway. I'll be laughing at that for the rest of the show. Oh, we can't wait till Dave comes on. We'll tell him. Have you been Fauci'd? What? What do you mean? So Pianki's here. He couldn't resist that either. So, Pianki, have you been Fauci'd?
Good morning.
You know what? Good morning, Jane and Mr. You know why South Africa and Africans have less incidents? It's because they have a stronger immune system, whereas natural immunity can take place. They have more diversity within their genome than anybody else when you really measure it.
Why is that?
And,
just be curious. What creates diversity?
Well, it's because that's where
different nations.
It all began, and then they spread. They colonized. And then they would come back. Everybody comes back home sooner or later.
Mm-hmm.
So that diversity is more within the populations in that area, especially in South Africa, Central and South Africa, than any place else.
Mm-hmm.
Because on the continent itself, you have such a diverse groups of people, and they all interconnected genetically at some point in time.
So now I thought
and
it
also,
the
as far as the immune system is concerned, because they live in more what you would call primitive, a primary condition, than what people are in Western world. You know, they don't clean the walls and mark and wipe them down with spick and span and Mr. Clean. They're more in contact with the soil. We wear shoes and material, other materials made out of for shoes, so that's one of the reasons.
See, now I thought it was more because of the ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine used as a preventive of malaria in some of these countries, which I don't think South Africa has a malaria problem, which means they probably have a greater incidence of COVID, plus a greater white population and maybe a more affluent population. I mean, South Africa is not your typical African country. You know, they had apartheid.
Yeah,
they were settled by Dutch and English and, yeah, go ahead.
Well, see, sickle cell.
Mm-hmm.
In a subtropical area actually is a benefit. It only becomes a detriment when you take a person out of that area and they come to the Western Hemisphere, mm-hmm. whereas red blood cell can be perfectly round. When it's sickle, the parasite that causes malaria can't latch onto it as readily as it can.
Sickle cell, is it necessarily anemia in Africa, or is it just sickle cell blood cells? They just form a different shape.
Yeah, they adapt for the environment.
Okay.
One of the greatest things of the human body is this ability to adapt to the environment of
mm-hmm.
nature.
Yeah. You know, I mean, Africans adapted to a sunnier, hotter climate. You know, Caucasians adapted to the Caucasus Mountains, a colder, more overcast climate that I'm much, you know, happier in. And so, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, humans are incredibly adaptive.
Well, there was Africans that migrated up into those areas. Their body adapted to the environment. The gene that causes pigmentation is relatively new because of the changes have, it wasn't always like that. Matter of fact, your East Asians have more of a presence of Neanderthal gene than Europeans do.
Europeans have what, Cro-Magnon?
Well, they, you know, erectus, Homo sapiens.
No, this is an interesting subject. Well, because, you know, because the if I remember, the first of all, you go back to Olduvai Gorge, you know, and the Leakeys, Dr. Leakey, they discovered, you know, what believed to be the first man. Then, of course, in Asia, you had Peking Man, which is now, I guess, Beijing Man. But you go back to the origins of humanity, and you start, you know, working backwards. You've got, I think you've got, you know, modern Homo sapiens, that's us. And then the next form of man was Cro-Magnon, which people say Cro-Magnon because they can't speak properly. And before that was Neanderthal, which I've heard is Neanderthal, depending on who you talk to, elitist little snobs. And I've forgotten who's before that. But the various stages of development of humans, you know, and as you go back to the different evolutions, I've forgotten that, but I think I've heard that before, that the Neanderthals were much more of an Asian representation because they're better in the warmer climates and tropical, you know, as opposed to the Cro-Magnons, which I think did better in the Ice Age, you know, 50,000 years ago, or however long they were around. You're basically Nordic. I guess they became the Vikings, you know, barbarians up there. And then somewhere along the way, Homo sapien came out of somewhere. I'm not sure, you know, the exact origins. We could look more into that, you know, whatever the latest research is showing.
They all
came out of Africa.
They all walked
So wait, if I go back far enough, I've got a black, you know, African ancestor. That's cool. That means I'm diverse.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you could look at it like that, yes, it, you know, we all related, and our nearest cousins are the chimpanzees.
See, that's the Hawaiian belief too. You know, that's why everybody calls everybody else cousin in Hawaii. And I asked my tour guide about that. I took my daughter there a while back and went to Oahu. Spent a great week there. Anyway, so our tour guide, it was just fabulous. Spent a whole day touring around Oahu. And there's a lot more to the island than just Waikiki Beach, folks. Anyway, so he's calling everybody cousin. I said, why do you call everybody cousin? It's really kind of cool. He says, well, man, we all have the same air. You know, we're all the same thing. And we look a little different, but we're all people and we're all cousins. He says, yeah, you're right. So, you know, if I call you cousin, that's why.
You know, people in the Western Hemisphere has a higher level of Neanderthal gene than those in Africa. They got a very, very, very little level of that gene.
Well, I don't think Neanderthals were really ever in Africa. Were they? I don't remember. I mean, what's the development? I mean, if you want to look into it, this would be a fascinating thing for us to research. You know, human development through the different evolutions of humans. We need to do, I'm writing down here, human evolution. It's something we can dive into, and let's find out. Let's see what I haven't done a show on that, but it'd be interesting to pursue that.
Yeah, well, you can see some Neanderthals today. I think John Madden was a Neanderthal.
You know, people use that as an insult. You know, because
it's
from not an insult. Were more successful.
It's really true. They were bulky guys, bulky in their torso and so on and so on. So they had to be in order to be able to contain heat to survive in those environments that they were in.
Yeah. Today we call them linebackers. Yeah.
Yeah. Linebackers today.
Yeah. You know, that Neanderthal stock. Now, does that go to ancestry? What's that?
You know, I'm going to tell you something. That's why education of your young children is so important. Mm-hmm. Because then they would be able to have a better sense of why things are the way they are, rather than taking on these pre-agendatized notions that people like to teach.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing.
It causes division.
The variety of subjects we cover here, we'll get Dave Schneider's he's our young reporter. He'll be, he's still in high school. He'll be on tomorrow, starting the show off at 6 o'clock. And so it'd be interesting. That'd be a good thing to raise with them is what kids know and what they don't know. Certain kids do. The elite kids get all this information. But I think the average American who's destined to be a cog, you know, in the machine of the globalists, is not getting anywhere near the education. The things that you, me, and Gene and the other folks talk about on the show, the variety and the depth that we go into and all kinds of things. In fact, Paulette got after me yesterday while you're talking too much, you know, science, talking about, you know, the chemical formula of glucose. I don't care. My audience can handle it. You know, this is why I want to go into these things. But we do cover a variety of grounds, and you know, and you look at some of the interviews that people are doing. Those, you know, like Jesse Waters, who's still doing, you know, this is, I'm Waters, and this is my world, which he got from Bill O'Reilly. He said you need some shtick so people remember you. It's stupid. Anyway, I wish he'd stop doing that. But point is, he interviews a lot of stupid people out there, and people that don't know. Now I'm sure they're selecting the dumbest people to make Waters look good. But the point is, there's a lot of people that don't know a lot of the things that we talk about here every day. Like the evolution.
You know, when the first DNA was discovered back in 1869, 1860s, And the oldest DNA found so thus far is up in Canada, in one area. I can't think of the name. Because it's been preserved up in those cold regions. In the hot, warm, dry regions, it's hard to preserve it. And also, when you found a cave like Denison Cave, you found a lot of bones, and the DNA has been pretty much well preserved, and one can make these studies. DNA sequences have surpassed, as either added to or taken away the old method of anthropological and paleontological studies, just looking at bones.
Yeah, it's interesting. DNA.
But anyway,
get
back to Dr. Fauci.
Dr. Fascist?
We don't want to leave him. Yeah.
Don't be Fauci'd. Yeah. Hey, I found something interesting here. This is from Mises Institute, which is up in Auburn University, not too far from where I am in Milton, Florida. It says, with low vaccination rates, Africa's COVID deaths remain far below Europe and the U.S. Okay. And so this is what I think, this is where I think the real scandal is, that the mild Omicron variant, I always want to say mild, folks, keep that in mind. I'm going to beat this into your heads. It's the mild Omicron variant is purposely, even though it happened in all these other countries all at the same time, you know, I think they focused on Africa because Pfizer wants to push their messenger RNA GMO shot onto Africa because they have such low jab rates. Anyway, it says, this is from 1123 by Ryan McMacken. Since the very beginning of the COVID panic, the narrative has been this: implement severe lockdowns or your population will experience a bloodbath. Morgues will be overwhelmed. The death toll will be astounding. On the other hand, we are assured those jurisdictions that do not lock down, the due lockdown would only see a fraction of the deaths, death toll. Then, once the vaccines, which we know by a different name, became available, the narrative was modified to, quote, get shots in the arms and then COVID will stop spreading. Those countries without vaccines, on the other hand, will continue to face mass casualties. Well, that didn't work. The lockdown narrative, of course, has already been thoroughly overturned. Jurisdictions that did not lock down or adopted only weak and short lockdowns ended up with COVID death tolls that were either similar to or even better than death tolls in countries that adopted draconian lockdowns. Lockdown advocates said lockdown countries would be overwhelmingly better off. These people were clearly wrong. Well, of course, because it's a marketing campaign. Then we get to the African situation here. Well, wait a minute. This is undaunted by the increasing implausibility of the lockdown narrative. The global health bureaucrats are nonetheless doubling down on forced vaccines, as we see now in Austria, the country that voted for Hitler, by the way, okay? I mean, they voted to be taken over. Austria's got a different mentality. Austria, I know you're listening. Actually, no, you left Action Radio. You guys ought to come back. Anyway, it says, and we continue to be assured that only countries with high vaccination rates can hope to avoid disastrous COVID outcomes. Well, it seems to me that the people, the higher the jab, the more the problems. And we already documented that earlier in the show.
So
it says,
you know
ahead,
what you've actually seen? You have seen a transfer of government taxpayer-funded wealth into the hands of pharmaceuticals and other infrastructures that make it work, like hospitals. They receive a bonus. And
this
that's
is
what you got, even African countries. African countries wouldn't be inoculating their people unless they get something out of it. You know, people that have these greed will sacrifice some of their own. And that's exactly like what you see, like Gene said earlier. If you could sue, then that wealth would be more evenly spread through amongst people because then they could get some of the wealth due to the lawsuits they would win. But what was one of the first things that they did? It made pharmaceuticals immune from lawsuits.
No, they made vaccines immune from lawsuits. Pharmaceuticals are still fair game. This is why remdesivir, you should be able to sue over remdesivir. I'm surprised it hasn't been done. I don't know if, you know, people are afraid to bring the lawsuit. The doctors are afraid to bring it because they'll lose their medical license. And that's the extortion threat. So if it doesn't work by law, they do it by extortion.
Right. It's the vaccine associated with this.
Now, we have a bill. Okay, folks, we have a bill. Go to writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws, anywhere in the world. You can take our bill, take the link, send it to your elected officials, especially in Australia, and you can change your laws by getting enough people behind it and being more powerful than the money. As people are still more powerful than the money that the special interests have, but you got to get organized. We've given you the tools, and it's up to you to start sharing the links to our bills. And then things will change, but you just have to have enough people to do it to make that change. That's where it's going to come from. All right, back to the article here. It says the experience in sub-Saharan Africa called both these narratives into question. Africa's numbers have been far, far lower than experts warned would be the case. Well, we knew that before going in. It says, for example, the AP reported this week that in spite of low jab rates, they said vaccination, Africa has fared better than most of the world. And here's the quote. There is something mysterious going on in Africa that is puzzling scientists. Well, it doesn't puzzle us. Anyway, said Wafa El Sadr, chair of the Global Health at Columbia University. Africa doesn't have the vaccines and the resources to fight COVID-19 that they have in Europe and the U.S., but somehow they seem to be doing better. What an effing surprise. Back to the article. Fewer than 6% of the people in Africa are vaccinated. For months, the WHO, not the group, the World Health Organization, has described Africa as, quote, one of the least affected regions in the world in its work with pandemic reports, proving once again that lower jabs mean better health. It's right there. Jackie?
Well, yeah, you're absolutely true. See, Africa has resisted the West homosexuality. It has resisted the West vaccination. And they have resisted the West in other areas, too, because they lean more on tradition, which include natural immunization. So yeah. People like Obama has tried very hard in order to crack that, but they have fought him and others along the way.
Yeah. I got David Jones on the line here, too. Did you hear about this thing I read yesterday, Health Impact News? Of course, I can't post this. November 27th, new COVID variant scam was simulated in Israel weeks before it was discovered. I presented this to Gene and everybody else yesterday. But let me see if I can find. Plandemic, full feature. Oh, okay. Let me scroll down to where it gets into Israel. Here we go. Israel simulates COVID-19 war game Omega exercise. Omega, isn't that close to Omicron? Gee, what a surprise. The coincidences just never end here. 2 weeks before its current use. This current new variant, this mild variant, get the word in your heads, everybody, this mild variant suddenly appeared in Africa and then the rest of the world, apparently, and started making the news cycle. Israel, which has been Pfizer's human laboratory to test their COVID shots, ran a, quote, war game simulation to prepare for a deadly new variant, which at the time had not yet been named. They called this future variant Omega. Okay. Jerusalem Post reports dozens of top officials took part in what Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, it should be Bibi, but that's okay. Israel screwed up. Naftali Bennett called a COVID-19 war exercise on Thursday to gauge the country's preparedness for the next wave of the planned pandemic. I call it planned. That's my word. He says, we are starting an unprecedented event here. The Prime Minister said at the start of the exercise, not only on an Israeli scale, but on a global level. Yeah. See, this is where they practice their stuff. We are conducting a war exercise to prepare for a new variant that does not even exist yet. Why would you prepare for a new variant that does not even exist yet? They knew it was coming. What do you mean?
Because
they knew exactly it was coming.
These new variants.
Yeah. Okay. So the variant was, in fact, let's make David's line live. The variant was created because it was genetically engineered, as all these variants are genetically engineered from the vaccines to sell more vaccines. And I think it came specifically this time, A, to get Africa more vaccinated when they're doing just fine without it, B, because all the court cases have overturned Biden's illegal mandates, and C, because the damn thing is dying out anyway. That's my take on it. Jackie, comment, Gene, comment, then we'll get to David.
Well, under normal circumstances, as it has for millions of years, with mammals and other variants of mammals, human beings, it would naturally just go away.
Yeah, it would have been gone July 4th. You know, July 4th, 2020 is COVID Independence Day. I declared it then. I stand by it. It would have been gone if the government had done nothing. And I think Peter Navarro is the one that recommended it. I don't know who else recommended it. Peter Navarro, who also had 60 million hydroxychloroquine tablets ready to distribute, would have stopped the pandemic cold in about 2 weeks. But Trump went out. He believed he got Fauci'd. Let's give Dave a round of applause. David Jones, co-founder of Santa Rosa Volunteers, our big sponsor here at Action Radio, and a friend of mine. Welcome, sir. Welcome to the show. What's going on in your world? Or you want to comment on anything we've been diving into here in the last little bit?
Good morning. You guys pretty much hit the COVID thing on the head. We've kind of beat that dead horse for the last 2 years. And naturally, viruses, bacteria, whatever it is, when they mutate, they get weaker and weaker. We're not seeing that with COVID there, and that's why we know it's man-made, it's synthetic. It continues to be stronger, the Delta variant, et cetera. We know that they're manipulating the vaccine or the numbers on COVID. We know that they're taking all of us for a ride. They're selling their vaccines, making billions.
You know, and I'd love to talk about other things, but they keep throwing this in our face. Now they've got the mild Omicron variant. You know, it's like if they just leave us alone, we could do other stuff. We could work on the economy. And I've got a ton of things to talk about. Actually, I'm going to run some of the things by you that that I've been thinking of. But let's get the Santa Rosa Volunteers, the local report. What's going on, stuff that you're working on, and then I have some issues for you, Pianchi. Pianchi's on the line too, which is good because I want to talk flying as part of your report. I want to get into some really cool airplanes I've discovered. And Pianchi's a pilot too. So we've got three pilots on the show right now. This is great. I'm excited. Anyway, so you first, and then we'll digress from what we do.
Things have kind of slowed down a little bit over the holidays. We've got one of the commissioners is supposed to be inviting the CEO of Santa Rosa Hospital to a meeting, putting it on the agenda where he can answer for the things that he said and done in private. You know, he continues to tell these politicians, elected officials, that there is no mandate at the hospital. They're not doing X, Y, and Z. And contrary to every bit of the evidence that I continue to put in front of them, they'd rather just listen to what somebody tells them over a phone call. So James Calkins has actually stepped up, and he's going to invite the CEO to an open meeting where he can actually explain himself and be held accountable for the things that he's saying and doing and affecting people's lives. So that should be a positive thing. Hopefully we can get in there and get some answers from him. We've got all the lawsuits going on over the vaccine mandates. Actually, Mary Goldman is a lady of the chairman of the Republican Executive Committee. And she actually called yesterday and is going to take this to the governor. The governor's got their Christmas ball or whatever at the governor's mansion, and she gets the opportunity to bring some concerns to him. So it's she's going to bring up the vaccine mandates and what we're experiencing in Santa Rosa County, contrary to the legislation and the things that they've done in Tallahassee to try to prevent it.
Are you in contact with her? Is this somebody you know?
Yeah.
Okay, good. We got to talk off the air then. Because we need to get Action Radio to the governor too, because we've got some serious bills here. The illegal alien free zone, if Santa Rosa won't take it up, maybe the governor knows another county, or maybe it's something he would introduce to the legislature. Plus the fact that we have enough ideas to help propel him into either the governorship or the presidency, you know, in 2024. So we definitely need to talk to the governor. So you and I need to have a little chat. But this would be a great way, I think, to introduce, you know, us to him. And I actually met DeSantis when he was a congressman. There was a rally at the Fish House, I think in 2018. Matt Gaetz was there. Ron DeSantis was there. Jim Jordan was there. I got to meet him, too. And Sean Hannity, who I didn't meet because he was swamped with too many people. But that's okay. He's not my favorite you know, radio person or TV person anyway. But, yeah, I would love to be able to. In fact, Josie was there with her bill on fingerprint voter ID. And so there's a lot of things we're doing here at the state level. Also, our bill to stop the dissemination of people's personal information from the voter records online. That bill also gets rid of all voter registrations December 31st at midnight, so everybody re-registers. That prevents dead people from re-registering or registering the first time. And the people that have moved and everything else, we have some safeguards that you can only register once, and there's a cross-check across counties, you know, to make sure that nobody's, you know, registering multiple times or registered anywhere else in the country. I'm not sure how to do that. But there's also provision that people that use personal information gathered online have increased penalties, you know, added onto their jail sentence. So we've got a lot of things that I'd really love to talk to the governor about. So, which organization is Mary Goldman head of? And maybe I can contact her myself or we can talk. But which of the Republican groups is she run?
The Republican Executive Committee, the state-sponsored Republican, the official Executive Committee of Santa Rosa County. She's the chairwoman.
Okay.
She's also a member of the Rules Committee in Tallahassee, so she makes frequent trips to Tallahassee. She's very involved.
Mm. Okay, sounds good. And if she's ever at a meeting that you and I are attending, one of our many Republican gatherings, I think I'll be at Gulf Coast Patriots next week. And so been at Convention of States meetings and been at a couple of other ones recently. So I'm getting out more. So actually able, and of course the rallies, the rally in Pensacola where I got to speak and made some really interesting connections, and we'll hopefully be on Brian Artis's show fairly soon and some other things. But yeah, so we're bringing up, but to be able to talk to, we need a governor contact. Go ahead, David.
Let's see what happens when you hang out with me. All of a sudden you've got a full schedule of meetings every night.
You're the man, dude. You are the dude, man. It's great.
Yeah, you know, another thing.
You go ahead, Bianchi.
Another thing you want to start discussing is about having those separate ballots.
Okay.
Federal and presidential candidates should not be on the same ballot with state and local. And that there, see, the way it is now, if we had an election in 2024, it'd probably go the same way it is. Was for 2020 because you haven't put no tangible things in place.
Well, 2022
another
also.
Thing like this gentleman here just got through mentioning about the mutation and how every mutation derives weaker and weaker and weaker. That's the kind of discussion you want to have with some of these idiots because they can't deal with that. They only saying what they hear, and what they hear is what they come to you with. So keep discussing the science. You don't have to get deep into the science. You can start on page 1, 2, or 3. You don't have to go to page 426 with them. Mm.
Okay. Well, I listened to some of the debates in Tallahassee when they were proposing their four bills, which were a hell of a lot weaker and far less comprehensive than our two bills. You know, our bills on the Parents' Bill of Rights and redoing the constitutionality and emphasizing the constitutionality of the Public Health Administration bills are far better. In fact, I'd love to have Mary Goldman on the show. David, if you want to invite her on next week, you know, to come on with you and me, and we can talk about some of the bills, and let's start to make some of these connections, and especially our public health bills. We should have our new website up by then, so it'll be easier to view the new bills. Well, those two, the public health, the Parents' Bill of Rights, and then, of course, Bianchi can call in with his bill, you know, on separating the ballots, and we can talk about our illegal alien free zone bill for Santa Rosa County, any other county, and any other bill that, you know, might be of interest. Let's get her on. You think she might be available? I mean, you know, you can tell me later, but hopefully, you know, she'd be a good guest to have next week. We could do all that stuff.
I'm sure she wouldn't mind getting on.
Okay.
She's very traditional Republican Party.
Say gelding. Don't say gelding. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, you can, and she calls them rhinos too, and she talks the talk. She knows what county she's in, but she's not us.
Well, and this is, you know,
well, you know, when you say like you're not moving as fast as you would like to, it's always good to get some outside input. Just little tidbits here and little tidbits there will help you to drive you further and faster than what you're going now.
Well, we're trying to move the geldings as fast as possible. And in my contention, in fact, Gina and I talked about this yesterday, that if they don't fix 2020, if they don't start disqualifying, you know, the illegal Biden electors, if they don't do something to the voting machines and come out in favor of come up with some kind of a 10-point contract for election integrity, I mean, like now, you know, then there's no reason to have any faith in 2022. This idea that they say, well, the Democrats are unpopular, we're going to win. That's BS. That's nonsense. Concerning the geldings are the one that put Biden in the first place. The geldings are the ones who are voting for these stimulus bills. You know, the geldings are the ones who are doing all kinds of horrible things. And here's something for all of you. This is one of these bigger issues. We're facing a government shutdown again. You know, I've been through like 50 of these things over the last 20 years. And this one, and you got Janet Yellen screaming, well, we have to raise the debt ceiling to pay our obligations. What obligations? The Democrats and a certain amount of Republicans passed, I think, three multi-trillion-dollar bills just in the last couple of years. You want to stop the budget problem? Stop spending so much damn money. If they just rescind those, repeal those, there wouldn't be a budget crisis. You wouldn't have to raise the debt ceiling. So they're doing it ass backwards. They're spending money they don't have and then saying you have to raise the debt ceiling to cover the money they spent that they didn't have. This makes absolutely no sense to me. And this is something where the states have to start rebelling, saying, look, we're not going to pay you, the tax money if you're going to see, if you're going to keep spending this way. If you can't control your own budgets, we're not going to send you money. We're going to force you to do something. That's the kind of thing that a DeSantis could do. And he could take the lead on that and say, look, you're spending stuff that is illegal. Remember when I wanted to have the Supreme Court void the federal budget as being unconstitutional? This might be a time to do it. Anyway.
I actually got something very similar to that that I sent to DeSantis almost a year ago, basically outlining a state bank. Set up a state bank, and you collect all the federal taxes in the state, and you hold them within the state. Then you nullify all the illegal laws and edicts coming from the federal government, and you just tell them, look, you guys get back within the box. You meet these parameters, then start following the Constitution. Then we'll release all of your federal taxes. Until then, they will be held in the state in an interest-bearing account, and we can manage that in the state. It'd be completely legal. It falls within all the laws that already exist. You don't have to create new ones. But, of course, I doubt it ever even got to DeSantis. It probably went.
Give me a round of applause for that, David. That's brilliant. That's absolutely brilliant.
Needs to be done?
Hold on a second. Can you send that in as a bill to writeyourlaws.com? Just put it on we'll get it on the new website, but to go to writeyourlaws.com, legislation, and then click down to the first one, propose a new law, and we just need your name, your email, the title of the bill. Tell us what you sent to Santas. You can put it in the same exact thing or edit it, post that, say that you're a human and send it off to us, and I'll post on our website, and that's what we should be advocating. That's absolutely brilliant. I love it. Bianchi?
Yeah, awesome. Love you, man.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, another thing you could do along those same lines, you're doing it with government, but individuals can do it. Retirees can have no deductions out of their retirement. People that's working can just increase their dependents where the amount that's withheld is much, much, much lower. That way you're keeping your own money and not letting the IRS keep it and give it back to you at the end of the year if you so happen to have a lot of deductions.
There's two things we need to do on retirement. The first one is, this is a bill I've wanted to work on for a while, is the retirement exclusion. So that if you get a military pension, like a post office pension, you don't have any. It doesn't affect your Social Security. All pensions should be independent and cumulative, and there should be no reason to take away from one pension, or Social Security simply because you have other pensions. That is horrible. Folks that have served in the military, worked in civil service, I wouldn't do it, but I'm just saying. But those that have more than one pension should not touch their Social Security. But the second thing is, we have to get rid of Social Security anyway, because I had a little post on my thing that you get at least three times the money, in your lifetime if you simply have what Chile does, which is a mandatory. I think it's 10% of your money gets put into a retirement account every year, and you can select where it goes: mutual funds, S&P 500, or real estate funds, or gold, or whatever. I mean, they have certain selections that you make, but you can't touch that money until retirement. I don't know, it's 62 or 65, but the thing is, that's your account. And you get the full amount of it, when you retire. But it's because it's yours, you can pass it on. Because it's yours, it's consistently earning interest. Because it's yours, you can keep it after you retire and keep investing. You can do whatever you want with it. It's your money. But that is a far superior system than the system we have now, which the government takes most of your Social Security. It's already spent. They're dependent on new people coming in. That's what I think a lot of these illegal aliens are all about, is increasing Social Security funds. But the idea that we don't have a privatized retirement system is insane, because the profit alone would justify it. So we got to separate the pensions, make them independent, and then ultimately get rid of Social Security. Well, actually, not ultimately, as soon as possible, except for those of us already.
Well, it shouldn't be taxing Social Security anyway. But like I said before, anyone that's on a pension, on pension wages, a pension income, there's a form, and on that form, you can have $0 deducted from your pension income. And those who's working a regular job now before retirement, they should just mark off additional dependents. I mean, mark off 9 dependents. And that will have least amount withheld from your check every month. Now, can you imagine the federal government looking at a lot less money at hand and trying to figure out what they would do with it if just the opposite the way it is now when they have all
Well, people should always do that and maximize the deduction. Start a small business. You know, use Schedule C. You know, try getting something creative. You know, you have so many years where you can even lose money and still write off you know, write off your income, you know, your employee income against your business startup. You know, the IRS is actually pretty good about startups. So they give you tax breaks for starting business, and a lot of business expenses are deductible. You know, so there are ways to do things legally, nothing wrong with it. In fact, it's good for the economy, especially when your business works out, like Action Radio is going to. I intend to create a ton of jobs from this little enterprise. Anyway, but the point being that, yeah, the tax system, you know, does need to be redone. But I'll tell you one better, Pianki. We have a bill that eliminates withholding until you've earned your standard deduction. Okay, now you want to watch the government go apoplectic? I mean, this bill, and I could have gotten rid of withholding completely, but I don't think that's going to fly the first time. But if you have, it's a very simple, straightforward bill that says that during the time of your standard deduction earning, whatever that is, 12, 5, 12, 13,000, whatever, it's going to go up every year. It was 12,000 when I wrote the bill. So your first $12,000 is not taxed, no withholding. Then it kicks in when the money will be taxed. So instead of, you know, people say, well, what about my refund? Well, you're getting your refund this year instead of next year. So rather than having your refund, it's like a pre-refund because the money's never taxed. So they're never taking money that they were never going to tax anyway. What do you think of that, Pianki? I'll get Dave and Gene on this.
That sounds great. And yet, okay. You know, look how ignorant people were with Donald Trump tax decrease.
Mm-hmm.
They were getting more weekly, and they were looking for that big check at the end of the year and was disappointed because they didn't realize you've been getting it all weekly, all alone.
Yep. Well, here's the big shock, too. When people suddenly get their tax withholding back or, you know, at the end of their standard deduction earning, and it's like, wait a minute, I'm paying that much in taxes. That's the other effect of the bill, is the shock people into how much money they're actually paying in taxes. And that money's not going to be refunded because, you know, that's you know, it's past your standard deduction time. Well, maybe the exemption money. We'll see. Anyway, but the refunds would be a whole lot smaller. David, let's get back to you because this is kind of like your chance to check in here. What do you think?
Yeah, there's a lot there. Pianki's absolutely right. If we could get everybody to maximize the dependents and everything and take the least amount possible in combination with what you're talking about, not taking taxes out until you get the standard deduction. Honestly, all of this is educational for people because 98% of the population has no idea what taxes are, what their purpose is. If you go back and look at the federal income tax and when it was put in place, the intent is to be able for the federal government to drive the economy through the tax codes. If they want people to invest in clean energy, then they give tax breaks for clean energy and solar and wind and stuff like that. They need they see the population growing. They know they need more houses. They give people who invest in residential homes a bigger tax break. That's how this is supposed to work. It's never supposed to fund the government in the traditional sense that we know it now. Same thing with retirement. If we use their system against them in retirement, everybody should be investing in tax deeds. 401ks, you're literally planning to retire poor. You're planning to retire in a lower tax bracket than you are now. That's why the taxes are deferred. It's absurd. Your standard 401k earns between 1 and 2.5% if you're lucky, and the rate of inflation is 3%. So you lose roughly 1 and 1.5% of your money every single year. If you invest in tax deeds, the average return on tax deeds is 18%. And
tax, what are they called? Tax deeds? What are those?
So say you have property every tax season locally, every local government, your cities, your counties, your states, post the taxes, the local property taxes that have not been paid. Well, you go in and you pay the taxes, say they're $1,000. You pay the $1,000, and the owner of the property has 3 years to pay you back with your percentage of interest. The interest starts at 25%, but usually you get bidded down a little bit. So whoever wins the bid, their percentage of return is what they get. The average is 18%. Like I said, I've been doing this for years. So when the owner gets back on the street or realizes that they haven't paid their taxes and they pay them, they pay you your $1,000 plus $180 for your 18%. Well, one, that keeps your money here locally. It keeps your money funding your local governments, not your federal government. It keeps them up and running, and you get an 18% return on your money at a minimum. If it goes for 3 years and you don't get and nobody pays the taxes, you call for a sale. Somebody they sell the property at auction. You can buy the property at auction. You get the right of first refusal. If you don't want to, you let it get sold, and you and the whoever buys it gives you your money plus your percentage, so you still get your money. Or I've done a few, gotten a few properties. I bought 5 acres up in Jay. I paid $1,200 for it for tax deeds. So that's the retirement strategy that we should be pushing. I've taught a few classes on this.
Well, you need to teach one for us. You need to spend an hour on this, and this is fascinating.
I
never heard of it.
They call it one thing where he is. In other areas, it's just when a piece of property goes up for auction because of the taxes. And if somebody come in and win that, well, the owner has an opportunity to buy it back by paying the taxes that the person put up plus interest on. Then, just like you say, if they don't do it, then you put it up for sale and you recoup your money.
Yep. And if not, if these properties just sit there, and trust me, every year it's thousands of pages, hundreds of thousands of property, even in the state of Florida. If they don't get paid, then the state loses that funding. The counties and the cities lose that funding, and they lose money. And then in turn, they go to the federal government for grants, et cetera, which puts our local officials at the mercy of the federal government. If we properly fund and control our local governments, then we won't have as much federal problem as we do.
Yeah, and that gets right back to who's supposed to be controlling the federal government. It's the states.
Yep.
Well, I'm surprised this isn't better known. And so this is something we need to, we should focus more on is tax things like this, because anything to keep the money here. I love the idea of restraining the federal government. I've been thinking about it for a long time, that the state should withhold money from the federal government, especially for unfunded mandates, for now unconstitutional things they're doing, for these vaccine things. You know, the state of Florida should withhold it and have all the money that would the federal government put into a state bank. And then we could make deductions and say, well, look, you unfunded this mandate. You broke the law here. We're going to use this money that would have gone to you to pay for this thing that you shouldn't have done. You know, there's all kinds of things that they could. It's so like rent. When you have something break and your landlord doesn't fix it, you say, well, I'll take that out of your rent. You know, it's a similar kind of a similar kind of principle. But I think it's a brilliant idea. And it's perfectly constitutional simply because, you know, the anytime the federal government exceeds the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, it's illegal anyway. And that's why I wanted to bring the federal budget to the Supreme Court. Now, you know, not that I thought that the Supreme Court would overrule the federal budget, but just the idea of bringing the federal budget to the Supreme Court, and with the idea that it should be ruled unconstitutional, would I think have a major impact on the political debate. And people go, wait a minute, what do you mean the federal budget is unconstitutional? Well, it is. Look what they do. You know, most of it, three quarters of it is illegal. So I think, yeah. So
well,
many
you know,
ways we're going to post it. Bianchi, go ahead.
You got people that would argue against you on that, and they would use all sorts of tactics in their argument. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And one of the latest ones that I had the other day, well, if you left it up to the states, blacks would not be able to marry whites.
What?
When you have a fool like that using those type of tactics, turn around and run from them as fast as you can.
Yeah, there's certain people you can argue with, and you know I've been convinced for a while that when people start doing circular arguments, or when they start saying the same the same old talking points, well, that's just your opinion, or you're not dealing with experts, you know, I know better than you, and all this other kind of crap. It's like or prove it, or they'll say show me evidence, and then you show them evidence, they say, well, that's not evidence. Okay, fine, I'm done. I'm not gonna waste my time with you anymore. You know, but there's so many people like that that just there's just totally
mess
with you.
You got a large contingent out here that wants the federal government to control everything rather than the people.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, people don't understand the basic government. We've talked about this before. There's let's get into the nasty question here, the abortion issue. The case is going to go before, I think, the Supreme Court tomorrow. People don't understand that this is absolutely a state issue. And I don't say states' rights because no government has rights. Only people have rights. Individuals have rights. There are no collective rights either. That's another complete misnomer. So as this goes to the case is Mississippi right now. Mississippi has a law that after 15 weeks you can't have an abortion. Well, that's Mississippi's within their powers to do that because the 10th Amendment says those things not delegated to the federal government, you know, are reserved to the states or the people. Okay. Well, in this case it would be the states simply because it's a health issue and all health issues are state. There are no health issues before the federal government because health isn't mentioned in the Constitution as a delegated power. That's the first problem. The second problem is the Supreme Court cannot make regulation, policy, or law. So Roe v. Wade is an illegal decision, as any decision of the Supreme Court creating a national policy or law would be illegal because they don't have that power. So they've bluffed. They've bluffed this nation. They're still bluffing this nation, saying that, well, we found this right in the penumbra. Well, A, you can't find rights. That's not your job. B, your job is to read the Constitution and use it as written. And C, you can't make policy anyway. So for many reasons, this case should go, as it goes forward, the most important thing is the fact that not only can you get rid of, we'll see how the judges, you know, issue their opinions, but, you know, this goes against judicial review, which needs to be eliminated or greatly reduced. It goes against a bunch of things. But it's a fascinating case, not only for the fact that I think it was who was the senator who said we've had 60 million abortions in this country? I mean, it's a huge number. And I'll tell you about the bill that I wrote a while back that I don't know if you're all aware of. Anyway, so Mississippi court decision before the Supreme Court. San Rosa Volunteers having any impact on that? Are you guys talking about it? Is this an issue raised with the Republican groups around here? Because I know we've had heartbeat bills here. I think Mike Hill had a heartbeat bill before he lost the election.
Somebody at a bar.
Let's go David
Hill
first.
Had a heart.
Go David?
Ahead. Yes, Mike Hill definitely put a heartbeat bill forward. I think he's actually, I talked to him a month or so ago, and he's actually working with Andrade, I believe it was. They might be trying to get that put back up next session. Okay. But if you step back away from it, I completely agree the federal government doesn't have the power to make policies like that. It's not outlined in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, which outlines all of the federal power. But if you get away from birth certificates and legalities of life and death and all that stuff, how do you determine life? So we determine when somebody's deceased by their heartbeat. If your fetus has a heartbeat, it is not your body. It is a separate living human being. And if you terminate the heartbeat, then you've just committed murder. There's no other argument beyond that.
That's a good point.
In fact, you don't even
how
have
do you
to determine
death
just
after the heartbeat. Good
you can
point.
Go by DNA check. You know, a DNA check will prove that this is an independent human being at whatever age of life it is. You know, Pienk, I'm sorry, I stepped on you. What were you saying?
No, what he said is absolutely right. How do you determine death when the heartbeat is no longer there? Well, if death is when it's no longer there, then life should be when it is there.
Yeah.
People
that
predict tomorrow
that
Clarence Thomas will give a good argument, unlike what he's ever done before.
Well, I hope so. Gene, I'm going to get your opinion on this. I'm dragging the conversation here. Even get her line live.
Yeah. I really don't have any other comment.
Okay. Well, let me talk about a bill that I wrote with a bunch. In fact, I think I did this before Gene came on producing, but I wrote a bill with the help of a lot of conservative women on the show. It's an abortion bill that legally splits abortion into two events. And so abortion is redefined as the termination of a pregnancy. See, the problem with abortion is not the termination of the pregnancy, it's the termination of the life of the baby. And so what I found, and I don't know if this is something that we want to talk about as a talking point or something that's to think about as an argument or an actual bill. Something we want to implement in law and take to our legislators. I think we should do that. I think we should take it to our legislators. But if Mississippi has their bill passed, that's going to open up the state's powers anyway. It won't be necessary. But what I did was I wrote a bill that splits abortion into two separate acts under law. The first act under law is the termination of the pregnancy. The second act under law is you have to save the life of the baby. So, and the second part determines the first part. So in other words, a pregnancy cannot be terminated until such point as you can save the life of the baby. Obviously, this would terminate parental rights of the mother, because why would you terminate a pregnancy if you wanted to save your baby? You know, that wouldn't make any sense. So then the rights would go to the father and the family and, you know, adoption, all kinds of other things that have yet to be worked out. But just the idea of disconnecting this automatic thing that abortion always means the death of a baby, which makes no sense, especially with the medical technology these days. You've got babies that are saved, premature babies at, what, 22 to 24 weeks, and they're doing abortions at, like, what, 39 and 40 weeks? That's irrational. There's no reason to do that. So if you sever that connection, and here's what's interesting about this, I think, is that it's both a pro-choice and a pro-life bill. It's pro-choice in the fact that you're not saying you can never terminate a pregnancy. Okay, what it said, and pro-life is, you know, you're saving the life of the baby. But what it's saying is you have to. It's a conditional. It's a conditional thing where, because it's not just your life, and I do a whole article on why I think pro-choice is pro-choice times three, because the mother is exercising choice over her body, the baby's body, and the father's life. Well, that's three people, okay? So there is no pro-choice. There's only pro-choice times three. And so in that respect, no one person should have the right to decide the fate of three people. One person should only have the right to decide the fate of one person. And the way that you do that is to have if a mother wants to terminate a pregnancy, okay. But the condition is you have to be able to save the life of the baby as a separate event. So that is, it is conditional, but it's a separate event. And if you split those two things under law, this is an entirely different debate. And then you don't have to determine when life begins, because what you're determining is when life can be saved. And that, I think, is a much easier argument to make. Who wants in on that?
Yeah, that's definitely something I can get behind.
Okay.
It outlines, you know, there's a lot of other things. Like you said, the father, really, I kind of got deep into the abortion issue. A very close friend of mine, his fiance at the time got pregnant and had an abortion against his wishes. He's had to seek mental help and things before. It's all he's ever wanted to be as a father. And she had the authority to go and terminate his child and kill his child without his consent.
It's a tough issue, because men should not be determining what women do with their bodies. I mean, I agree with that. But women should not be determining what men do with their fatherhood. You know, in other words, there are men who would if they had the choice, if they had pro-choice, would not be fathers, who get child support for 18 years. There are men like your friend who desperately wanted to be a father and had that right taken away from him by someone who had an abortion. Now, if abortion was disconnected from – if it was only the termination of the pregnancy, the fiancé could have terminated the pregnancy and he could have kept the baby. Because you wouldn't have that automatic connection that abortion means death. What I'm trying to do is separate the connection between abortion and death. Abortion should only be the termination of the pregnancy. I don't want to get Jeannie on this conversation. Looks like Josie's on the line too. Jeannie, you want to say anything here? I want this to be like a guy's only conversation.
Well, that it's such a tough thing, because you know, you could say it's a woman's choice, which, yes, I get that. And it is. But yet it's like, The father is a whole – that puts a whole other dynamic to it. And so then it's like, yes, okay, the woman gives birth to the child or would have to carry the child for 9 months. But if the woman doesn't want it, but the man does, it's like I don't see how the woman can just make the total decision to say, no, I'm getting an abortion or whatever. That's just not right. That, yeah, it's –
Yeah, and see, and that makes perfect sense. But that's why the bill, you know, the way I wrote it, is that, and I, you know, if you want to terminate your pregnancy, that's different than terminating the life of the baby. And if we start thinking in terms of splitting those under law, Josie, I'll get to you in just a second. I know she's on the line. But if you think in terms of splitting this, that way you maintain the choice of the woman to control her body. She doesn't want to be pregnant. And this wouldn't count for women that want to save their babies, that want to give the baby to the father anyway, or even up for adoption if they're a single person and the father's completely uninvolved. All the choices where a woman would make to save the baby, this law doesn't cover that. This covers the situation only where the woman wants to kill the baby as part of an abortion. See, that's the difference. Every other option is already open, okay? But in those cases, what we're saying is, no, you can't do that because it's not your life to kill, okay? But and then, of course, it gets complicated. This is a complicated bill.
It's very complicated, yes.
But I think it's worth pursuing.
Another thing that makes it complicated.
All right, Pianki, then David, and then we'll get Josie. Pianki?
Another thing that makes it complicated is that you got some women that use abortion as birth control. And then for those who's on a spiritual level,
mm-hmm.
when a woman who's had multiple abortions do try to conceive and form that baby in her womb, the baby is being formed in a haunted house.
Well, there's also, I think, I don't know what abortion does to fertility, but I can't imagine it's good. I can't imagine it has a good effect if multiple abortions and people try to get pregnant, women try to get pregnant later on. Let's get Josie in on this here. I know she's got a take on it. Josie? Welcome to our conversation with David Jones,
Center
of Volunteers, Gene and Pianki. Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead. Yeah, Josie?
Good morning. You know, the sad part about this whole thing, because I've been a pro-life in front of that abortion clinic for 11 years behind Hobby Lobby, it is painful to see how much a lot of these women, they regret after they can hardly walk to go back to their cars, and some of them bleeding all the way down to their shoes. I have brought women to my store that they were alone, and they just let you go. But the thing is, these people are confused, this country, this law that they made, because if a woman that is pregnant gets shot by a criminal, they get accused for two murders.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? The baby and the mom. But it's okay for a mom to murder their own baby and nothing happens to them. And you know what? The other thing is big business, because when Hillary has her hands in it, you know there's something going on. Because Abby Johnson in Texas, when they had the first huge meeting, she was going to be rewarded because they sold so many of these abortions, you know, body parts. Hillary Clinton was in the meeting, and she was like, what is Hillary Clinton doing here, she said, because she was sharing with us, Abby Johnson, when she came here with us. It is very sad. This is big business. They don't care about the life of your baby. All they want to hear is murder because they're making a lot of money. This is about money. They don't care about
vaccine,
life.
Isn't the alleged vaccine, don't they use fetal aborted tissue in making these COVID shots?
Yes.
But the sad thing is, too, there's maybe not many people out there like that, but when a female finds out they're pregnant, and let's say they broke up with the person that's the father, whatever, what it is sometimes they can get very vindictive. And they don't look at what's best for them or the child. All they want to do is the opposite of what the other person wants. And they'll do anything to hurt that other person. And that's why it's such a slippery slope and very sad.
Yeah. Many of the
cases that we encounter when we were outside the clinic there, it's the boyfriends that don't want them to have the abortion, and they really are forcing the women to come in and kill their babies.
And that's wrong,
and
too.
And sometimes,
sometimes
it's the women that says, my body, my choice. And we had young men crying in their car, like, just crying out of control because they don't want their babies to be murdered. And there's nothing they can do because they are in control. They said, it's my choice, my body. And
right.
we convinced so many. We did so many baby showers to to a lot of those young women. Some of the little girls, they still send me pictures, and I keep up with them. It was tough. It was not easy. Now the Black Lives Matter have taken over the abortion clinic with the college kids. So we are not allowed to stand in front of the abortion clinic anymore since 6 months ago.
Wait a minute. What's going on with that? How is Black Lives Matter blocking you from protesting at an abortion clinic? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, we cannot go near anymore. The college kids and the Black Lives Matter have taken over, and now they say they own the street right there. They
curse Santa Rosa volunteers. Let's see how this goes.
Yeah, I was waiting for you, David. Dave and Josie, you guys need to talk, and let's see what we can do about this. This requires some video, some protesting.
How can this abortion clinic own the street? There's a dental office. There's some insurance company around, Boar's Head and Hobby Lobby. How can they own that little street? So we're not allowed to come near. And they told some of the businesses around, if they allow us to let us park there, that they're going to burn their places. So everybody's freaking out. Everybody's upset. So
let's get that recorded. Let's get some of these threats recorded. Yeah, and broadcast. Yeah. David?
So a lot of the college kids.
Hold on, Jesse. David?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You would give Josie my contact number. That way she can call me. We'll put a stop to that. But this issue gets a lot, it appears a lot more complicated than it is. And the left always does that, and they've done it for so long on this issue that we actually buy into some of their talking points. I'm not going to tell a woman what to do with their body. I agree with the basic principle, but why aren't we fighting for prostitution? Prostitution is illegal. You're going to tell a woman what she can and cannot do with her body there, but the difference is we're not sacrificing another human life. There is no fight over prostitution laws in this country, which to me are a lot more of a violation of a woman's right than abortion is. But it's not. Mm-hmm. It's about to be.
Well, let me ask – that's an excellent point, too. Let me ask Josie. I don't know if you've I think we've talked about this, but it's been a while. The idea in our Action Radio abortion bill that we actually split abortion into two separate events under law. One is the termination of the pregnancy, and the other is the saving the life of the baby. And saving the life of the baby takes preeminence, obviously, that you cannot terminate a pregnancy. We're not stopping a termination of a pregnancy for those the women that want to, but the contingent is you have to save the life of the baby in the process. That way, you know, the pregnancy's over. And that basically ends parental rights for the woman. Because if you're terminating a pregnancy, you know, if it's not some emergency health or other, and I don't even get into all the complications, but if your sole purpose is just terminating a pregnancy for the purpose of killing the baby, that you can't do. That has to be illegal under law. But you still have the option. The state's not so oppressive that it's saying that you can never terminate a pregnancy. There's still a choice element in there, but as a separate event, you have to save the life of the baby. So your abortion to terminate the pregnancy is contingent on saving the life of the baby, which I think we can do after so many weeks. It's pretty. I mean, nothing's guaranteed, but we're you know like everything else, we try and do the best we can.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense to you, Josie, as someone who's been an advocate of pro-lifers for so long? What do you think?
Well, our main goal is to rescue the life of the baby. Bottom line, even if the mom doesn't want the baby, and we have tell people, hey, you can give it for adoption. But you know, Greg, like I have this young girl from Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
She had two little girls, and I convinced her not to murder her baby. And now, my God, she is her favorite baby. She decided not to give up for adoption the baby. And another girl from Mississippi during COVID season, she came and she had the paperwork and everything ready to give her baby up. And guess what? We did a huge baby shower for her. Abraham, the Jewish Messianic church. So some of the places allow us to do a baby shower. Or we do it a la hacienda. It doesn't matter. We do it. But This is horrible what they're doing, and this is big business. This is big business. This is not about the life that they're worried about. And now with the 9-month-old babies being murdered, this is this is not good. A lot of it is going to come out, what they're doing with the blood of the baby, and the younger the better, that's what they want. It is horrible what is happening to our country. This is sad. This is very sad. But I haven't been there in about 7 months because they don't allow us to go anymore.
We got to do something about that.
So,
I got a question for David.
So you need to send me. Go ahead.
All right, did. Check your text. It's already done. Do you think that maybe the Citizens for Medical Freedom, the Doctors for Medical Freedom, if we get the doctors involved with this, the people that actually, you know, probably either maybe formally did or never did abortions, do you think, David, we could get some of the – well, I'll talk to Cindy about this too, but do you think they might want to help with this and go to this abortion clinic and take the streets back? Or is that a separate issue?
Mm-hmm.
David, what do you think?
I'm sure Cindy and that group would be on board. I doubt the doctors would have anything to do with it. But I know Cindy and the individuals that protest there, I'm not going to speak for them, but I don't think that they would have any problem supporting this issue. And between them and my team on the sidewalk, I don't see anybody that would so much as approach us.
Okay. You might want to get Mike Hill involved, too. I bet you he'd have an interest in this as well.
Well, he was involved for a while. I don't know. And and Dr. Lyle from Sacred Heart, he's very involved with us. So, like whenever I had a girl that convinced to come with us, we would take her immediately to Sacred Heart, and Dr. Lyle will see her to do an ultrasound for free. So we would drag some of those girls over there. So... he really been involved in the pro-life for so many years. Yeah. Dr. Lyle, William Lyle from Sacred Heart.
You know, it's interesting that the FBI is taking people who are, you know, parents and school board meetings and labeling domestic terrorists for just wanting to speak. And basically, you want to do the same thing. You just want to speak. And yet Black Lives Matter is saying that the streets are ours. You can't speak. That, to me, sounds like domestic terrorism. That's almost like a federal... because I don't want to get the FBI involved, but I'm just saying, but the principle that they are blocking your speech, there's got to be something illegal about that you can take to a district attorney or somebody, you know, like I say, or any of the advocates. You know, you'd think the ACLU would actually be involved with this. But where do they think they can get the – where does Black Lives Matter think that they can stop people from speaking? And what's their interest in abortions? Why are they so pro-abortion?
Well, they were hired by the abortion clinic because they don't have a security guard anymore. So they have a bunch of Black Lives Matter group with college kids. And they're like very abusive, almost spitting in our faces. And some of the little kids bringing dirty pictures and putting it almost in the faces of the young
kids. Let's out these people.
We have. But you know what? The police came and the police got us out of there. So you're not allowed to be here anymore because this street is privately owned. So I never heard of such a thing in my life that a street is owned privately.
Well, there's got to be a way to find out. I bet you it's not. David, do you know,
I don't know about
local government. Can you tell whether the street's privately owned or not? I don't think there is such a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
there is privately owned streets, but that's easy to find out. But
they don't have businesses on them.
Yeah.
Private streets are like residential.
Mm-hmm.
No, residential streets are still county or city. But if you have a large developer that goes in and buys, you know, several hundred acres of property and puts an industrial park there, all of those roads are private. As long as the city or the county they're not paying to maintain that property, then it's a private street.
Okay.
Maybe that's what it is then, because the police came and got us out and said, don't come back here. Yeah. So that's probably
like they're lying. Who paved the street? Who cleans the street? Seemed to me like a good tool to alleviate their problems called Louisville Slugger.
Is there, on that street, do they have public street signs like no parking or, you know, legal parking permits? Or is there anything that indicates they're a government street?
I don't think so. It's they have a dental office. They have a few insurance companies, Boar's Head, Hobby Lobby's in the same street. I don't know, you know.
Protest
but
in front
no
of, get Hobby Lobby involved. I would protest in front of Hobby Lobby and say, you know, and get support of Hobby Lobby. And it's just like the folks that are protesting Sacred Heart, they're across the street because you're not on Sacred Heart property. If you're not on the property of the abortion clinic, I don't see how they have any say at all on what you're doing.
No.
Anyway, you guys talk.
We're only allowed to be in the Davis Highway and in the street only. Not in this street anymore. So anyway.
Nah, this
that's why
very,
I haven't been there in a long time.
Yeah, see, this is the beauty of Santa Rosa Volunteers in Action Radio because,
yeah.
You know, David has a lot of people. And God bless him for doing the work that he does. But
you two
can get connected. And like I say, we've got some other folks around this area. We're becoming extremely active as we do what we can to make this the freest county in the country with model, you know, legislation, which is my, you know, ballpark. That's where I like to play. And so I like to write these things out that can be then, you know, David can then, and you, Josie, and everybody, Bianchi and Gene, you know, can then use to be active and submit to media, talk shows, Congress,
mm-hmm.
local government, state governments, things like that. But I think if we get a connection to Governor DeSantis, that's going to be huge. So I want to talk to David about that off the air, too. David, do you have anything else? I want to totally change the subject here for the last few minutes that you have here. And now that Bianchi's on, I want to talk airplanes for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And do you have anything else that we should talk about?
No, I'm good, Greg.
All right, let's have a little fun.
Hey, Greg,
yeah,
I
go,
have
Jesse.
To let you go. I have to get ready to go to work,
okay?
Okay.
All right.
So
we're going to get
you
flying. You know
Dave,
that, don't
I'll
you?
I'll be in touch with you. Yes, I'll be in touch with Dave. Thank you.
Okay, good. All right.
Okay,
thanks
bye-bye.
To both of you. You know, like I say, you two can do some amazing things, I'm sure. And let me know, too, because it'd be great to be able to document, have you on the show ahead of time, you know, get more folks in. And I'll talk to Cindy about that before her report and see if she wants to get involved as well. I want to have a little fun because I got Bianchi and I got Dave and the Royal Pilots here. Dave's learning to fly. Bianchi, what are your ratings, Bianchi? I don't think I've ever talked about that. But what all you got? Let's get him back on the
line.
What
do you mean, what have I got?
For pilot ratings, what did you end up with?
Oh, no, just general.
Well, like just a private pilot?
Yes. That was a hobby for me.
Oh, okay. Did you ever get an instrument rating? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, we had that.
Okay. Well, that's cool.
But
anyway, what's that?
We didn't have a modern hood. We had the old-fashioned hood. It's like the gallows hood.
Oh, I've done hood training, yeah. So you had instrument training, but you don't have an instrument rating? I'm just curious.
Yeah, we had the instrument rating. We could fly in the clouds if we had to.
Okay.
But we didn't – but I was running parallel with another, you know, with my main profession, so it was just a hobby, really.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
we had some people that flew just to fly. They didn't have no rating, no license whatsoever.
Oh, God, I don't want to hear about that. Don't go breaking the law on my show. Yeah, I don't want to do that. But this has always been a fascination for me. I tried to be an airline pilot, and the most amazing series of things that went wrong. It's like the planets aligning in such a way. I don't even want to go into it. But the point is, I want to get back into flying, and I think this is one of those times in this country where you know there's some new airplanes coming out, where it might be more affordable. Where I think we have an airport here that I think would be a great place for all kinds of wonderful, you know, experimental airplanes to fly in. And I just think this is the time. Maybe even Gene, we'll get Gene to take a lesson. Gene, you ever thought about flying? Interest ever crossed your path?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Especially as a child, I always thought about it. But then as I got older, not as much, but definitely when I was younger, I wanted. That was one thing I always thought I wanted to do.
Okay,
but I just never did. And then as I got older, that wasn't as important. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me take you up in
well,
Action Radio 1.
Well, I'm trying to
teach
my grandson how to fly.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
That's what I mean. Yeah, I'm trying to get the grandson to get his general aviation license.
Okay. Well, you know, there are good times to fly and there are not so good times to fly. I mean, the airlines laid off thousands upon thousands of pilots and other airline employees during COVID. Now, of course, they want them all back. So now's a great time to try and be an airline pilot because you got a great chance to do it. It's all timing. It's one of the weirdest professions out there. I happened to get all my ratings and experience in the early 90s, right when they all went broke, Pan Am and Braniff and TWA and, you know, a lot of airlines, you know, totally reorganized, restructured.
Delta.
Yeah, but I think...
You know, another thing, too...
go ahead.
Because there was a high demand for pilots even before the pandemic, the false pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And because you had a lot of them that was retiring, the Bureau of Labor Statistics had predicted about 400,000 in commercial industry and about 12,000 in the military.
Well, that's interesting. And the military is not turning out pilots as much for the airlines either, because they're growing more to drones and the airplanes are so expensive. And, you know, how many F-35s do you think they can make it? You know, what, $100 million an airplane, whatever the cost is, it's prohibitive. But I think Europe's got the right idea. And this, I want to kind of talk about this. I sent Dave the video. I don't know if Dave had a chance to look at this, but there's some new airplanes coming out that I think I'd love to make a center for that here, where we have these wonderful, they're listed as experimental, but they're carbon fiber. They weigh about 800 pounds. They have a Rotax, which is a totally different kind of airplane engine. It sounds like a lawnmower, actually. But it's like 150 horsepower Rotax engine on an 800 pound airframe, you know, is about this. They do over 200 miles an hour, and they run on car gas. And I'm just thinking it might be really cool to somehow either bring a festival here or have a center or do something with it. That would be interesting. We got an airport right here. I think it'd be fun. Dave, what do you think?
Yeah, we kind of tossed this idea around last time I was on the show, and okay. Definitely think that it would be an awesome thing. You have several different national air shows here in Florida. Most of them are in the central or southern part of Florida. Honestly, we more beautiful scenery. We have a prettier beach. We have better things to offer than those areas. And I haven't quite got to the stage of planning or planting those seeds yet, but I do know Cedar Prince is very well funded through the county, and it's a very nice airfield. So we really need a secondary field if we're talking about bringing the planes, the number of planes that I'd like to see. We'd need a secondary location, but I'll look at all that.
Well, is it big enough to put a second runway in? Could we do a separate runway there?
Sun and Fun in Pensacola.
Yes, Sun and Fun. Sun and Fun's no Lakeland. Sun and Fun's, I was actually there once when my book came out. I actually
Lakeland,
sat at the author's table. Yeah, Sun and Fun's in Lakeland. Can we bring an air show here? We got the Blue Angels. I mean, it's the best air show in town, but they perform over the Gulf. They're there on the beach. But I don't think there's an air show. They don't. Well, they perform at airports all over the country, but they're not here because they're in Pensacola. Do they perform at Pensacola Airport ever, or is it always at the beach?
It's always at the beach. They don't ever go to Pensacola Airport because they're out of NAS. They're down off the Navy base.
So why couldn't we have like a Sun and Fun here, or maybe develop? We got the Milton Historic District. I would just need some. More accommodations for people, but maybe even stay at the airport. But we got this incredible resource right here. And I think especially with the growth of some of these new, cooler airplanes, the one I'm looking at costs about $200,000, which may seem like a lot of money, but the real expense for a lot of the older airplanes is the maintenance and the fuel. And if you've got an initial cost that's go ahead, Dave. How do we do this?
Yeah, airplane dealers the opportunity to bring their planes down and show them off. And also have a strong conservative theme, a lot of American flags, a lot of good songs. And that's the way and when we teach Jean how to fly, she can fly over Black Lives Matter rallies and drop flower bags on them and turn them all white.
Oh, you drop flower bags and turn Black Lives Matter white? Is that what you said? I like this. Yeah, Pianki, you better fly the plane because you won't be called a racist, and we would.
Yeah. So many possibilities, though.
Yeah. Well, just to change the subject again, Pianki, we had a show yesterday, which Pianki, I didn't get a chance to – I didn't want to explore at the time because we were talking about a totally different thing. But yesterday's show was on the use of the term black separatist, actually black supremacist and black nationalist, which I found on Tucker Carlson. I found a couple of other places, Laura Loomer's website. Pianki, did you have a chance to take a look at that? Because I think this change in language, and the fact that Black Lives Matter and the left didn't go apoplectic over the term black nationalist or black supremacist, I find that staggering by its absence. That's a huge change.
Well, yeah, I've been telling you that whites need to start using those terms. You
well,
have
they are.
To, because you've been bamboozled and been pushed over into a corner and made to fear the term when it's used against you.
But this is why I think this is such a significant change in language. I like to study language. I like to watch the use of language. You know, this is why I use terms like gelding old party for the Republicans or Dr. Fascist or any of those things that I use. There's a reason for it, or saying the mild, you know, Omicron variant. All these things create images in your head, and they create effects. They create lasting, you know, messages that that linger long after you say them. You know, anybody on the show knows who Dr. Fascist is. You know, a narcissistic, psychopathic, genocidal vaccine drug pusher. You know, Joseph loves it when I say, he's probably laughing right now. But all these words have meanings, and if we can start using, you know, for Daryl Brooks, the Islamic terrorist, Black Lives Matter, Nation of Islam, 5%er, you know, mass murderer, and classify him as such. This changes everything. The fact that he's a black Muslim as well.
He's a racist.
Yep.
He's a racist. He's a white supremacist. Matter of fact, my grandson just looked inside the door and told me to tell you, if black people can use black power, whites should be able to use white power.
Is he on? You want to get him on the phone? Is he there? Do you want to come join us?
Hang
I mean,
on for a second.
Yeah, okay. Talking about live radio, folks. we just improvise here. Dave, you have anything further or more on this topic?
No,
use of language?
I hate to, but I have to jump off. I got to get back into it, but I'd love to be part of the conversation.
All right. Well, you want to give your contact information
and
we'll talk to – all right, hold on just a second. Let's get Dave has to leave, so let's get his contact information and Santa Rosa Volunteer stuff. Go ahead.
Yep, Santa Rosa Volunteers, SRV1776.com, SRV1776@protonmail.com, Arise Patriots on Facebook. If you need this, reach out. We'll help you set up anything you need to, locally, not locally. Reach out to us. Let us know if you got a need.
Okay. Thank you, sir. And let's see what you and Josie come up with. I bet you it's fascinating. And we'll see what we can do there. And this is how we get people together here. Yeah. All right. So this is Pianki's grandson.
Greg and Jean. How you doing, Mr. Greg?
Oh, hey. Welcome to the show. So you got my flight instruction book, huh? The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction?
Yes. He buys me almost every day.
Well, welcome to the show. Hope you can be a regular caller here. Don't think of this as your only appearance here. But so where are you in your flying? What's going on with it?
Right now I'm using a couple of flight simulators. I'm about to take my drone 107 test in probably next month for flight certification.
You want to fly
and,
drones? That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I'm just going from there. You know, he started getting me into it really this year. So really now I'm starting to buckle down on it since I kind of got a little more time on my hands, not playing sports
right now.
Yeah, do what
you can. Once life gets involved, are you college or high school or where are you? I'm not sure how old you are.
Oh, I graduated college a year and a half ago.
Okay. So before you get
but I'm still currently taking classes right now. So
okay, well, before life gets too busy, now's the time. You know, there's two phases in life that are important when you're an adult: before kids and after kids. You know, I'm after kids. You know, so I'm creating extra radio, and I want to go fly jets, and I want to do all kinds of crazy things. I'm going to take Jean up in the jet and flip her upside down, and she's going to go, "Ooh, this is fun." You know, so we're going to have a little fun on my. Oh,
well, that lifestyle's a little better right now than having kids right now, so
oh,
I agree with you.
You don't have kids?
No,
have kids.
I have zero kids.
Okay. Well, have some adventures then. I mean, kids are great. I love kids, but I'm just saying that, the time now before you have kids and the time after you have kids is when you can do the really crazy stuff. And so make sure you make use of that time. Okay. And flying is such a sense of accomplishment. Well, you know, it's just Let me know what you think of it. So you're flying drones over regular airplanes? Is it the expense, or you just like the drones better, or what's your interest?
Well, my grandpa started me with drones.
Okay.
We have another flight simulator, but the planes, I haven't flown any simulation planes yet. But I've just been using my simulator to fly the planes, but I've flown my drone plenty of times. The drone seems a little easier to me. I don't know, you know, if it's just because I started with the drone, but.
Yeah. Well, if you were in the drone, it'd be a little different. They make drones that actually carry people. If you can, get yourself a lesson. Get up and fly an airplane, real airplane. And what I'm really excited about, I was talking about this just a little bit ago with Dave and Pianchi, is the fact that these new airplanes are coming out that are lighter. They're relatively expensive, but their operating cost is almost nothing. So the flight schools can start investing in these light sport aircraft that go, you know, 195 knots, you know, at 15,000 feet. So they have oxygen, retractable gear, constant speed props. You know, they cost about $200,000, but at 5 gallons an hour, that's nothing.
Schools would be good.
Yeah, exactly. So look up LSR. What is it? It's on my Facebook page here. Let me get my let me pull up my aviation page. It's probably the best way to find this because I got a bunch of videos, but it's a brand new plane out of Europe, and I think if these flight schools start getting them, we all thought ultralights were going to be the rebirth of aviation, but the American rules are so strict, you can't do it. So all right, look up JMB aircraft, and it's called a VL3. So you get your YouTubes up, JMB, that would be Juliet. I forgot my alphabet. What's M? Help me out, folks. And Bravo. Juliet, what's M? November. What was M in the phonetic alphabet?
Mike?
There we go. Juliet, Mike, Bravo. There we go. So JMB aircraft VL3, Victor Lima 3. And so that's the airplane you want to look up. And I don't know. We need new airplanes because the old airplanes are older, but they're really expensive. You know, to run and operate, and
you're the first person that has made that make sense, because I think a lot of people don't really talk about newer planes. I mean, you get any form of transportation, even when it comes down to just walking in shoes, we talk about new shoes and new cars and stuff like that. So that definitely does make sense, and I think it's very credible.
Well, thank
especially
you. Talk to your local flight school, see if they'll invest in one, you know, and the idea, I think a lot of pilots and the FAA has this problem with retractable gear and a constant speed prop. All that means is you adjust the blade angle to keep the RPM constant. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing complicated. I mean, gear is very simple. You raise it after you take off and you lower it before you land. It's not that complicated,
right.
You know, and if there's a problem lowering it before you land, it's got an emergency procedure to lower it. You follow that. You know, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
I don't understand why all planes aren't retractable. But anyway,
right.
Yeah. So get some flight time, get some when you can, and get up in a retractable airplane with a constant speed prop once you get the hang of it. So take your 172 and then go up in, like a Cardinal RG. It's one of the best out there. 200 horsepower, beautiful, clean airplane, does an amazing wing over. And some other really, because it's fast, it's really fast, very clean airplane. All right. Let's get on what you said before. A couple of minutes here, then I want to play our SRB piece and some other things and go on to the court cases that are of huge interest to me right now as well. We have a lot covered today. So I can say black, I can say white power. How's that sound?
Absolutely.
When it comes
down to it, a lot of people, especially my age, are going to disagree with me and have disagreed with me, but I mean, at the end of the day, people have to look at the reality of situations. If I'm a black man and I'm preaching all of this black power and stuff, which I don't feel it's wrong necessarily, but then a white person has the right to preach, you know, the same thing for their people. It's not a hatred thing. It's just more of a love thing and a support thing. And what I think is that a lot of people in general don't look at the reality of situations, either black or white, especially nowadays when it comes to politics and stuff. And people don't vote for their interests. Well, they think that they're voting for their interests, but they're not. people don't take into account the many different facets of reality, you know. And I think because of that, we have a lot of this chaos. We have a lot of these problems. I was just telling one of my friends that, of course, I understand that there are other people who have done negative things to black people. So mm-hmm. me saying that would be ignorant if I didn't say that. However, right. in 2021, I've grown up in communities where I've seen more black people cause destruction to their own community than white. And it's just a simple fact. It's not to say that I don't care about police brutality or whatever's going on in the world. But mm-hmm. if I see the numbers, and the numbers are reflected more on people who look like me that are causing more destruction to me, I'm not going to be as focused and oriented and emotionally tied to something that's not affecting my community as much. And that's where I think a lot of younger kids are getting emotionally tied into it, because they not understanding that, especially black people,
mm-hmm.
we can't sit there and complain about other groups of people when, in fact, our communities are being deteriorated by ourselves. You see what I'm saying? And, of mm-hmm. course, there's other aspects of it that just don't make it that simple, and it would be important to recognize that. But at the same time, there's far more that black people need to do and should do for themselves than to sit up there and complain about what other people are doing to us. And that's just straight up simple as I can put it, without any, you know, emotionally, and without putting any emotion in. It, like I said, it's a reality thing.
Well, you can get emotional. This is the ultimate free speech zone. We speak very plainly about race issues all the time. If you listen to Bianchi and me and some of our work, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Of course.
I got some questions for you, because you're really interesting. First of all, I hope you call back a whole bunch more, because it's really nice to have you on the air. And Gene, feel free to join us
Thank
as well. You're welcome. Do you ever use, or your friends use, the N-word, for example?
Of course.
And no problem. It's like common usage. How about if a white person uses it?
And of course. You know, when I was younger, I used to have a problem with white kids my age using it.
Uh-huh.
But see, in today's society, in my social realm, you mm-hmm. know, everybody uses it. So the fact that people try to make it seem like one person shouldn't use it at this point and one shouldn't, I mean, it's at this point, we all know all kids use the word. You know, it's used in music. It's used in our music. It's used in social media. It's used everywhere. So that would be like you can't get a person to stop using a word, no matter if you want to or not. I mean, people are going to use words. Now, in context, of course, it depends on who you are. For mm-hmm. me personally, I personally don't really even care anymore, because people are going to do what people are going to do. And I can't control that. All I can control is my interests and what I can do in life. And when I have kids, control what they do in life to a degree. But
really have kids.
I can't necessarily control what other people say and what mm-hmm. they say about me or say about other people.
Yeah.
You know? So in context, like all of my friends that are non-black know that if they say the word, if you say the word in right context, I probably won't even realize it. Now, of course, if somebody says something, you know, a little out of hand, that goes for everybody. You know what I'm saying? If I call a white person a stupid white cracker in his face, he has every right to be mad at me. You know, if a white person says the opposite to a black person, the black mm-hmm. person has the right to be mad. However, a smart person, black, white, Hispanic, whatever, a smart person knows that their words can't destroy them. So if you say something to me that caused me to be upset, I'll probably clap back in a way that makes you think. And when you say it again, you know not to say it around me.
Yeah, I think it's just,
it's
right.
Just
context,
a level
is
of
everything.
Intelligence and a level of respect that people should have for each other at this point.
Yeah.
And you demand, you have to demand respect from people. That's what I realized. Can't ask for it.
I think Gene wants a, has a comment, and then I have a few more questions.
So my grandpa's kicking me off now.
He's kicking you off. Call in on your own. 215-383-3822. Call in on your own. What's your first name again?
Quentin.
Okay.
Q-E-N-T-I-N.
Quentin, I just want to say thank you.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
What you said was brilliant. You know, it's interesting that we just need to listen to the younger people now and again and look at the knowledge we can gain.
That's what I want younger people on the show.
Of course.
Yeah. Quentin?
And one more quick comment I would like to add. You know, of course, I'm still a young black man, and of course, I live in a cultural phenomenon that's ingratiated by people who look similar to me more often. And so when it comes to that, there are, you know, certain stereotypes that people may think of that I actually do. You know, I like rap. I like sports. I like, you know, different stuff like that. But at the same time, I still have a sense of I still am able to think for myself and think about how things work and what makes things work. And so by me saying that, you know, we were just talking about the N-word, by me saying that when I was younger, I hated it. I've grown into a person that I know by me being mad and aggressive at every single white person that says the N-word, it would be almost ignorant of me, because we have it in our culture. And if you have it in the culture, then it's going to be expressed, you know?
Yeah. It's so interesting. I don't use the word because I feel
it's about growth.
Offensive.
It's about reality. It's about looking at things from different lenses, stepping into other people's shoes. And just ultimately being a person who really is just trying to make the world a better place, honestly.
Yeah. Well, before Pianki steals his phone back, I just want to say that we look at the world very differently. This is why I want to talk to you further, because, you know, I don't think of myself as a white person. And I grew up, I spent 4 years in Australia, where we had every race on the planet, but we all wore the same school uniform. I didn't even know about a concept of race. So I grew up in my formative years without the concept of race, which makes for a very different orientation.
Right.
So when you say the expression, one of the ones that bothers me, I want to talk to you further about this, not now, but we'll have you back on. But the idea of people who look like me, that's an Obama thing. And I always hated that expression, because people who look like me, implying white people. Well, there's a range of white people that's extreme, you know, from, you know, Attila the Hun, Adolf Hitler, you know, and some really, and, you know, Dr. Fascist, what we call Dr. Fauci. There's some truly monstrous white people that have been on this earth, all right? And there are also some really great people, Thomas Jefferson, Albert Schweitzer, Mother Teresa, and they're all white people. Does that mean they have anything in common? No. So the idea of an identity by color never made sense to me, simply because of the range of people within that color. So someone may look like me on a skin color, but nothing in common with me whatsoever. You know, and this is why
I
find this.
And there's people who look like you. There's people who look just like you, talk just like you, and to a degree act like you sometimes, but they have completely different personalities and completely different agendas. And that's what I've learned as a young black man lately, that a lot of people in my same category don't have the same thought process as me. And it's okay, but we have, like you just said, we have to realize that everybody, just because you look like a certain person, that doesn't mean you're the same at all.
Yes, yeah, this is why I want to get away from that stereotype that you're limited. It's almost like a limitation, that you're limited to your skin color. And what I want to try and get to is a place where we don't care about it. I mean, I've got far more in common with Pianki than Jeffrey Dahmer, who's a white guy, but also a mass murderer. you know, Bianca and I don't look anything like each other. And that to me is irrelevant. I never think about that. You know, Bianca's my friend. So it never, right. I don't really, unless we're talking racial issues, I go, oh yeah, Bianca's black. Yeah, now I remember. It never occurs to me. It's not part of my consciousness. And I think that's a huge advantage. And I wish other people had the benefit of spending many years of their life without race even being a concept. And having that to me is a huge benefit. I had to learn the concept of race when I came to the United States as a teenager. I'm like, what the hell's wrong with you people? You know, I mean, I saw America, and there were black Americans and white Americans and Asian Americans and all these other folks, and I just saw Americans. It never occurred to me that skin color made a difference until I was taught what it was. Then I learned the history of, you know, slavery and segregation, all the other things the Democrats brought on us, like the Ku Klux Klan and the modern resegregation that's going on today. You know, so I mean, but it's a political thing. So skin color is a political thing. It's a political characterization. It's not so much a physical characterization. Does that make sense? Is Quentin still on,
absolutely,
or did you steal your phone back? Oh yeah, sorry, Quentin.
See,
I love
okay.
talking to your grandkids.
Well,
he's great.
I appreciate talking to you guys, and I love having conversations like this. And I think everybody needs to have these conversations because, number one, it makes people uncomfortable. And people need to go out of
Not
comfort
us.
Zone sometimes.
I don't feel uncomfortable.
And on top of that,
you know,
it's just a sensible conversation.
Well, thank you.
So,
listen, Quentin, share our show with your friends, see what they think, and let's get them calling in too. So you're always welcome to call in. Feel free.
All righty. I will get that number from my grandpa. Thank you, guys.
215-383-3832. Once again, 215-383-3832. It's right on our broadcast page, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. And now you know. Bianca, you back? Do you steal your phone back?
Yeah, tell them to bring their own phones.
Bring more phones. Yeah, absolutely. Bring your own phone next time, dude. He's great. You should have had him on a long time ago. I like your grandkid. Smart kid.
Bianca, you sound just like level-headed and very, just how you talk, eloquent.
Yeah. So, by the way, that airplane... Look at that sling, S-L-I-N-G, the one with the parachute.
Okay.
If you pull off the air show, we could get some of those dealers to come down and put those on display. Hey, it would be a really nice time.
Well, that's what I'm going to talk to David about. The VLS, I think it was, whatever that airplane was, that has a ballistic parachute too. So all these modern airplanes, these light 800-pound airplanes, have parachutes. Which is really great if you're in the clouds and you're disoriented, you know, rather than go into a graveyard spiral or some of the other things, just pull the chute. Gravity will take you down, you know, nicely and land you somewhere. But at least it's better than destroying your airplane, you know, when the G-forces exceed the limits of the airplane. And these things are stressed. I think they're stressed up to 15 Gs, some ridiculously high number. I don't know if they're aerobatic, and this is the one thing that would stop me from getting one. If I can't loop it and roll it, I really don't want it because that takes away half my fun. All right, let's take a break here for a bit. Pianki, thanks you for having Quentin on. That was fabulous. And let's play undo our I'm going to play Anti-Federalist number 6 and getting ready for what I'm going to make today, which is Anti-Federalist number 7. So I'm going to play this one. Be right back to you all in a little bit. Listen and enjoy our founding documents. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments. Insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Anti-Federalist number 6 was written officially under the name Sentinel, which is a collaboration of writers. This one is pure genius. So much so that I hardly need to comment except to present the most brilliant passages. I encourage you to read the whole of Anti-Federalist number 6, as it is quite short, and in that brevity lies its power. It was published January 16, 1788. It begins, "The evils of anarchy have been portrayed with all the imagery of language in the growing colors of eloquence. The affrighted mind is thence led to clasp the new Constitution as the instrument of deliverance, as the only avenue to safety and happiness. To avoid the possible and transitory evils of one extreme, it is seduced into the certain and permanent misery necessarily attendant on the other. This is a great summation of what the much longer-winded Alexander Hamilton and John Jay were trying to hide in obfuscating yet colorful language. But essentially, that's it. Adopt the Constitution as is, or it's all over. America will cease to exist as we know it. The author then posits, if it's all over, if we don't immediately embrace the Constitution, and we descend into decadence and anarchy, is that really the worst possible outcome? Continuing on, Sentinel says this. If anarchy, therefore, were the inevitable consequence of rejecting the new Constitution, it would be infinitely better to incur it, for even then there would be at least the chance of good government rising out of the licentiousness. But to rush at once into despotism because there is a bare possibility of anarchy ensuing from the rejection, or from what is yet more visionary, the small delay that would be occasioned by a revision and correction of the proposed system of government, is so superlatively weak, so fatally blind, that it is astonishing any person of common understanding should suffer such an imposition to have the least influence on his judgment. In more modern language, stop filling the people with BS propaganda and tell the truth, because your lies aren't working. Then Sentinel presents the most brilliant observation into the fawning over and acceptance of the opinions of so-called, quote, experts, simply because they have risen to preeminent status. And that status alone is all that is needed to justify their aims, goals, and opinions. This mistake is the basis for the entire acceptance of government response to COVID, where clearly the experts are doing everything wrong, but want you to believe it's right, even after hundreds of thousands of people have died needlessly. But it's okay because they are experts, and they know best. Sentinel continues, but when I view among such converts men otherwise preeminent, it raises a blush for the weakness of humanity that these, her brightest ornaments, should be so dim-sighted to what is self-evident to most men, that such imbecility of judgment should appear where so much perfection was looked for. This ought to teach us to depend more on our own judgment and the nature of the case than upon the opinions of the greatest and best of men who, from constitutional infirmities or particular situations, may sometimes view an object through a delusive medium. But the opinions of great men are more frequently the dictates of ambition or private interest. Could anything more true be said today? This paper is so good, so full of richness, so prophetic as to what is happening today, that I'm going to hold at this the first paragraph and pick it up again next week with more of this amazing analysis, not only of what might happen with the ratification of the Constitution, but what actually did. The anti-federalists, it appears, were right. So now, what should we do? The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page 1. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's page one. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. All right, we're back with the last, I don't know how many minutes we've got here. About 36 minutes. No, wait a minute. It's 8:36, so that's less than that. So we've got a little bit of time, about 23 minutes. There we go. So much for my math. We've got Pianki still on the line, and thank you for having your grandson on. He was fabulous. So we need Quentin on. Like I say, he's got to get his own phone call in on his own. I'd love to have you both on the line at the same time. That would be a trip. That'd be very cool. Gene's on the line, and I've got actually, I want to get to what we started the show, what I titled the show off, but this is one of those fun days where we had so much else to talk about that I don't mind going, you know, wherever we go is fine with me. That's what makes Action Radio what it is, this continual improv thing where you never quite know, you know, what's going to happen. And that's what makes it fun. All right, so I got an article here I'm going to get to right now. So, Gene, do you have anything for us to get going? Or, Pianki, any comments that you wanted to make before I get started into something new here?
No, I don't have any comments.
All right, Pianki, I guess, is still muted. Pianki, just,
you always feel surprises, so we hang in on.
Okay, good. Well, sounds good to me. All right, so the title of the show today is Courts Are Blocking Illegal Vax Mandates. Next, disqualify Brandon. And so my point of this, we haven't really done a lot of election stuff because there's not a lot of election stuff happening. What needs to happen now, Arizona's done their audit. Wisconsin's, you know, working on one. Michigan, one of the sheriffs, has already declared that there's illegal activities, and they've got an arrest warrant out. And nothing's happening, you know, so it's time for the courts. The courts have done the right thing when it comes to blocking these illegal, unconstitutional vax mandates. That's what they're supposed to do. They're not supposed to come up with remedies. They're not supposed to come up with future regulations. They're not supposed to come up with policies. You know, all they're supposed to do is what they're doing, stopping the mandates, stopping the unconstitutional action. Then it's up to the legislatures of the states and the Congress and the local governments to take over and actually write the new policies. And that's what's happening in Florida. We have a bunch of laws that now protect employees and other people from these barbaric, you know, RNA GMO shots. But I found something very interesting. I got one article here, ABC 17 News, somewhere in the country, KQFX. I wonder where they are. It's got to be somewhere on the West Coast. Anyway, so they've got a pretty good, decent article here from CNN. I couldn't find the original CNN, but by Tierney Sneed of CNN. And it says, Biden suffers a string of court setbacks as administration's vaccine mandates are put on hold, which to me is good news. I mean, it's probably not good news for CNN, but for me, this is good news. So there's three court cases. Let me see. There's one where, well, I'll just read the article. Probably the best way to do it. The one we've been over in excruciating detail is the Fifth Circuit Court in Louisiana, I think, where else are they? There's a couple other states too, Mississippi, and I think, I'm not sure where else, Texas maybe too. Anyway, point being, Fifth Circuit said that the OSHA, you know, vax, you know, attempted mandate ain't going to happen. There's another one where there's like 10 states have sued, and the employee mandate from the Center for Medicaid, Medicare, you know, spending on all your doctor bills. They can't hold healthcare workers responsible for taking a shot they don't want either. Anyway, so this is recent. This is November 30th. So yesterday, the Biden insurrection, my word, has suffered three major court losses since Monday morning, with orders freezing key federal government COVID-19 vaccine rules in certain parts of the country, and in one case, nationwide. So this should all be done nationwide, but you know, we'll take what we can get and keep hoping that the courts continue to do the right thing. Article says the latest blow came from a came from a federal judge in CNN. What do you want? Came from a federal judge in Louisiana Tuesday afternoon, halted across the country the Biden insurrection's mandate requiring that certain healthcare workers be vaccinated. And so this is what we're talking about here. This is the Medicaid, Medi-Cal, Medicare. So I keep forgetting the word Medicare. Medicare, Center for Medicare and other M's, you know, systems. Article says the order in the Louisiana case was delivered a day after the insurrection's healthcare worker mandate. They're saying administration. You know what I mean when I say insurrection? Okay, I'm just trying to use correct language here. Healthcare worker mandate had been blocked in 10 states by a federal judge overseeing a separate challenge filed in Missouri. So try and keep all these straight if you can. There's three major cases, and I'll go over them in a little bit. And it came just hours, back to the article, and it came just hours after a separate Biden vaccine rule aimed at federal contractors had been put on hold in three states by a federal judge in Kentucky. So federal contractors, all those people that work in companies that you know, have anything to do with the federal government, you know, they're labeled as federal contractors, and the Biden insurrection was trying to say that, well, if they're a federal contractor, then we can order them around. Oh, no, you can't. They're still private companies. And then they also were saying that healthcare workers, anybody in the healthcare professions, that the Medicare reimbursement system was going to reimburse doctors or hospitals, you know, who didn't have all their employees with the jab. Well, you can't do that either. And, of course, the third one, the big one, is the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in Louisiana, which said that the Biden insurrection cannot mandate the jab for anybody in a company with over 100 people, and that that's going to come from OSHA, because OSHA doesn't have the authority to do that, neither does the Biden insurrection, and so it's all illegal. So those are the three major court cases we're talking about, and all of them are good, properly decided cases, which is great. The problem is that the mandates even existed at all, and that more states don't do what Florida's doing and use legislation to block the feds from their unconstitutional actions. Article says, meanwhile, a requirement that employees of larger companies get either vaccinated or tested for COVID-19 regularly remains frozen after a scathing appeals court order blocking the mandate earlier in this month. Let me translate that into English. Meanwhile, a requirement, a bogus requirement that employees of larger companies get either, a messenger RNA shot or tested regularly remains, you know, blocked because of its unconstitutionality after a proper appeals court order earlier this month. That's how you would say it in English, okay? But this is CNN. Back to the article. The administration has acted quickly to seek reversals of the orders blocking its vaccine rules. Well, of course they have, because they're Marxists. Anyway, quote, that threat to human life and health far exceeds the potential indirect harms to patients resulting from workers who may quit rather than receive the vaccine. As Gene would say, are you freaking kidding me? That's the Justice Department said in one such filing. Justice Department, of course, which is qualified to make medical decisions, right? Said Tuesday, asking for an appeals court to reinstate the mandate that covers certain healthcare staff at providers that participate in Medicare and Medicaid, which is almost everybody. Gene, you can help me on this one. If you take out the Medicaid, Medicare, Medi-Cal, Medi-everything funding from a hospital, is there any hospital that can remain in business? What do you think?
Well, you know, the thing is, for the county hospitals, it would be hard because they're the ones that usually get the ones that have, like, especially Medicaid, Medicare goal, you know, they're the elderly. But Medicaid is usually the people on disability or the children with, like, cerebral palsy or autism, that type of stuff. So
okay.
It's just really sad. You know, so you'd have the commercial insurances. And to be honest, the commercial insurances typically pay more than Medicare, but that said, it's just really sad that the government can mandate what the workers need for their body in order to stay healthy when there's no proof that works.
Well, and as we said on the show before, it's the ultimate irony that the people in the profession of healthcare are the ones objecting and willing to give up their jobs. You know, not they don't want to lose their jobs, but you know, if it's a choice between their jobs and their health, they're opting for their health. The very people that know health the best, because they're actually in the health profession. You know, you would think that would be a warning to the Biden insurrection, the thief in chief, that this is a problem. So why are they forcing?
Right.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I think one, they want to stick their nose in it. Two, it's not even that. They want people to get the vaccine. So this is one way to make that happen, or they think it's going to make it happen. But like happened in New York somewhere, I think there's an emergency room that shut down because they don't have employees. What are they going to do? People go there and they can't have services because it's closed because of the mandate, and they get the hospital gets sued. Then what are they going to do?
You know, hospitals are duty bound to treat everybody that walks in, regardless of, you know,
but
things
the thing
like
is,
immigration
they have
status.
No one there to work. If they don't have someone in the emergency room to work because they can, because they didn't get the COVID shot, I mean, wouldn't it be better to have someone working there that doesn't have the shot and be able to treat you because they have to wear their masks and everything? So it's like, I just, the hypocrisy of it all. It's a joke. It's like Biden over the weekend or wherever, Ducey was asking why he was in a store or a restaurant or whatever without wearing his mask, and then Saki was like, oh, well, he wears a mask because he likes to be an example to others. But they had a picture of him not wearing a mask, clearly not wearing a mask. So it's like, do as I say, not as I do.
Mm-hmm.
It's all for show.
Well, that's the whole purpose of this. You know, that's he's part of the marketing campaign. So he knows that this is part of a marketing campaign. That's why he doesn't wear a mask where he's not on camera. And that's pretty obvious.
But
let me get to this article.
Yeah,
go ahead.
But I think, too, what happened, I think the government, Biden and his cronies, the powers that be, just really thought that he was going to mandate a vaccine and people were going to line up to get it. And it's like, no, that's not how it happened. And it's interesting because I worked on last night my letter of exemption. And it's so interesting just what we said, what we were told to word it or not to word it based on people that know more about that than I know. But it's like, what a joke. What a joke. And that it's come to this.
Well, it's crazy that it's come to this. There's no reason for it. The fact that these things are illegal,
and
anybody that knows individual rights knows that these things are illegal. You can't be forced to put something in your body, you know, despite what they say about public health and the greater good. It doesn't work that way. Yeah, go ahead.
And the ironic part is last year when doctors and nurses and hospitals were treating all these COVID patients while people were sitting at home, working from home, or just getting a paycheck and not working, it's like they didn't have a vaccine back then. They did not know what the end result was going to be. And now look at, we know more of what works, what doesn't work. And the government is now mandating things worse than before. Why? Why? Last year was okay for us not to be vaccinated. You said, well, we didn't have a vaccine. Well, the thing is, the vaccine doesn't work. And if in this country, they would start publicizing the death and the injuries from the vaccine so people could wise up and really see what is going on. But they're not doing it because it would destroy their narrative. I mean, if any other medication would be taken off the market, it has been taken off the market for even one-tenth of the side effects that this one has, it would no longer be out there.
Well, why do you think this is the exception? These mRNA shots, which have a terrible record, they've got myocarditis in young adults, they've got blood clots all over the place. In fact, there's now a move. I found a Facebook posting where they had some of the effects of the shots, the jabs, were actually included in the symptoms of COVID. So they had COVID, they had the Omicron symptoms, the mild Omicron variant. They had symptoms of scratchy throat, muscle aches, you know, things like that, you know, tired, you know, kind of feeling listless. Those are the symptoms of the mild Omicron variant. But then after that, they started sneaking in, you know, potential for myocarditis, blood clots, and things like that. I said, those are symptoms of the mild Omicron variant. Those are symptoms of the shot. Those are symptoms of the jab. So they're just like they use the term illegal immigrant, which is no such thing. It's either illegal alien or lawful immigrant. They're blurring the line now between symptoms of COVID, actual symptoms of COVID, including the mild Omicron variant, and symptoms of the jab, the messenger RNA GMO shot. That's scary. And people, unless you're watching what's going on, you might miss it. You might miss that myocarditis is not a symptom of COVID. It's a symptom of the shot. That's criminal. Jean.
Yeah, that it is. Yeah. And the thing is, Greg, what you've talked upon about so many times, is they've had these vaccines way before COVID showed up. So this this has been in the works for many years. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know, however you want to look at it, I think Trump botched the situation because I think what he did was he became president. And I think if he wouldn't have been president, a lot of this stuff would have happened faster. And whatever their agenda is, if it's one world order, if it's a one world economy, if it's whatever it is, getting rid of some of the population, I really believe it would have happened much faster if Hillary would have been there.
Yep. Yeah, I hear rumors about they're trying to draft her and bring her back in, but I haven't heard too much of that yet. Anyway, yeah, this is let me get some of the court cases here. I think you'll find these interesting too, but I think you're absolutely right. And obviously we agree on this. This is why I like having you here. Even though we agree, there's still different things that you bring to the conversation that I don't know about. And so it's really great to have those additional things. Pianki, feel free to join in anytime as well too, because I know you're still on the line here. Anybody else wants to call in? 215-383-3832. Got about 9 minutes. Wow, the show's gone fast today. Anyway, the next subheading, claims of, quote, an erosion of our liberties. See, that's the problem, folks. You're trying to take away our liberties. Liberties are supreme over public health and over the public good and over the public interest. I explained this yesterday. Gene concurs that what is in the public interest, the only thing that's in the public interest is everybody making their individual decisions, the collective effect of the country's individual decisions. That's what's in the public interest, okay? That's how it works. It's not government dictated. It's not Dr. Fascist's idea of what is in the public interest, although he thinks it is. No. Individual rights, the Constitution, are supreme to any emergency, no matter how severe, and it has to be that way. Otherwise, the government will always declare emergencies. They'll always say they're severe, and then they'll dictate to you out of your rights. That's why they do it. All right. The next section says the challenges put forward, put forward different arguments for each vaccine requirement should be blocked. Touching on the insurrection's compliance with administrative law to constitutional claims about the federal government's ability to regulate vaccine participation. All right. I'm going to talk to Jonathan Mosley about this. The Administrative Procedures Act. This is what the liberals sued Trump on several times. Said he can't get rid of DACA because it violates, he didn't follow the right administrative procedures. He can't, you know, build a wall because it violates the Administrative Procedures Act. It's one of these catch-all things that the government uses to perpetuate something that's totally illegal or horrible or rotten simply because they follow the right procedure doing it. It's quite bizarre. Anyway, in the Kentucky case concerning the mandate for federal contractors, U.S. District Judge Gregory Frederick Van Tattenhove, well, that's a great name, U.S. District Judge Gregory Frederick Van Tattenhove said Tuesday, maybe it's Tatenhove, that the question before him was narrow. Oh, okay. He's quoted as saying, can the president use congressionally delegated authority to manage the federal procurement of goods and services to impose vaccines on the employees of federal contractors and subcontractors? In all likelihood, the answer to that question is no. Thank you, Gregory Frederick Van Tietenhove. He says the president, George W. Bush appointee said this in order, which blocked the which blocked the contractor mandate in Kentucky, Ohio, and Tennessee. So, if you are a federal contractor, in other words, if you do business with the federal government, you know, under some contract, there's no mandate for you. And that should be nationwide. I'm surprised it's not. Here we go. Next section. But other judges have used more sweeping language in explaining their decisions, while downplaying vaccine's effectiveness. Of course, just true. CNN in limiting the spread of COVID-19. Yeah, it doesn't. It's, in fact, I think it increases the spread. Anyway, they said during a pandemic such as this one, it is even more important to safeguard the separation of powers set forth in the Constitution to avoid erosion of our liberties. U.S. District Judge, this is Judge Terry Doughty, D-O-U-G-H-T-Y, a President Donald Trump appointee, thank you, in Louisiana, who blocked the health care worker mandate nationwide. Let me say that again, blocked the worker, the health care worker mandate nationwide. So, Gene, you're a health care worker. You should not have any mandate to get the jab simply because of what U.S. District Judge Terry Doughty, D-O-U-G-H-T-Y, did recently. What do you think?
But is it United States all, or is it just certain states?
So it's nationwide.
The reason I say, oh, okay, because yesterday I heard something where whatever court ruled it was for certain states, and I think those were probably the states where the attorney general sued or whatever they did.
See, that was the federal contractors. Federal contractors are exempt in 10 states from the federal mandate. Healthcare workers apparently are exempt nationwide. So what you want to do real quickly in the last 5 minutes we have here is look up U.S. District Judge Terry Doughty, D-O-U-G-H-T-Y, ruling on healthcare worker mandate. So if you want to do that real quick, or I guess you can't right now. You kind of got other stuff working on. We'll do it for tomorrow. But anyway, yeah. I'll send you the article. You can take a look at it. And I've already posted it on my Facebook page.
Perfect.
But anybody wants to find it, it's Fox 22 KQFX, somewhere in the western half of the United States. Quick appeals by DOJ. The Justice Department has not waited long to ask that higher courts reinstate the insurrection's mandates. Oh, really? The department has already asked the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals to revive the health care worker mandate that was partially blocked Monday by the judge in the Missouri case. That appeals court is made up of mostly GOP appointees, in other words, smart people, as is the Sixth Circuit, which would consider an appeal of the federal contractor decision handed down Tuesday in Kentucky. Yeah, so the Sixth Circuit is going to get the Fifth Circuit's case with the whole circuit, the entire circuit of however many, seven judges, whatever there are. And so the Fifth Circuit is the one that stopped the worker mandate if you have more than 100 people in your company. So there's three mandates, over 100 people in your company, healthcare workers, and federal contractors. Okay, this is what these three, it's confusing. It's confusing for me, but that's what these three cases concern, and all three of them have been blocked. Healthcare workers nationwide, no mandates. Federal contractors in 10 states, no mandates. Companies over 100 people, regulated by OSHA, no mandates. That's where we are. Anyway, the challenges to the OSHA mandate have been consolidated and transferred to the Sixth Circuit, which has not yet acted on a Justice Department request that it revive that policy. All three mandates, almost done with this article, almost done with the show too. All three mandates, when rolled out by the Biden insurrection, set December 6th deadlines for initial compliance. Well, we're going to pass that. Quote, this is from, I don't know who it's from. It says, simply put, delaying the standard would likely cost many lives per day. That's BS. In addition to large numbers of hospitalizations, yep, more BS, other serious health effects, definitely more BS, and tremendous expenses. The administration said in a court filing, that would be the Brandon insurrection, said in a court filing asking the Sixth Circuit to reinstate the OSHA mandate. Well, it was never an OSHA mandate. Never got that far. And they don't have the power to do that anyway. So there are a lot of reasons why that can't happen. Anyway, so that's where we are now. Three cases. Any comments on that in the last 2 minutes?
Right.
Yeah, Gene. Uh-huh.
Did the hospital in Florida, Sacred Heart, are they hiring back their fired employees, or are they still going by the vax mandate?
I don't know. Talk to Cindy Cagle tomorrow on the Medical Freedom Report. And so she'll be on at 6:30. So we get Dave Schneier at 6 o'clock with the world with the Dave Schneier report. He's our 17-year-old homeschooled brilliant kid. So we're getting more younger folks on. I want Quentin on. I want to get Quentin his own report. You know, a conservative black man's view, a young conservative black man's view on America, or something like that. We'll get a title for him. Say, Pianki, you think we can get your grandson get his own report? What do you think?
I don't know. I got to ask, but that would be interesting. What are these high schools doing right about now?
I'm not sure. Gene? Back to you, Gene.
Yeah,
I have to say that once a show.
I don't know. I heard that some people were, or some places were hiring back their fired employees, but I don't know if they all are. But I know my one friend, her daughter was told a couple weeks ago after she was giving an exemption from a hospital in Ohio, now they reneged it, and she needs to get the jab by January 1st.
There's got to be money in it. That's the next thing to trace is how much money. And where's the Center for Medicaid funding or Medicare funding? Betcha, that where this is coming from. That's my guess.
Well, even that, there is a lawsuit. They reneged on it. So some it's some snaky stuff going on.
Oh.
It really
That's
is.
The understatement. Yeah. Yeah. We got less than a minute. So I've been at the show late a couple of times this week, and I want to try and get off on time today just because. How much time do I have? Oh, 50 seconds. Okay. So the
okay.
courts are doing the right
thing. I'll see you
tomorrow. Okay. Thanks, Bianchi. Yeah, pass it on to Quentin. I'd love to give him a regular report, especially now that we have Claire has left us too, which is really unfortunate. But, people, you know, like I say, they accomplish the mission and then go on to do other things here. Gene, in the last 30 seconds, do you see any hope of any of these states anytime soon disqualifying Brandon and sending Trump electors to Congress? We got 10 seconds. What do you think? Yes or no?
I would say yes, I hope so, but it doesn't look good. I know. But I believe he's going to be back in office before 2024.
Okay. Good prediction. Let's find out what happens. All right. I got to go. We're actually up on time today. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. You can check out our legislative website, the world's only citizen legislature attached to a radio show at www.writeyourlaws.com. That's WRITEYOURLAWS. Back tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific, with another exciting adventure in Action Radio.
Have a great day.